Tonight on The Download, former soul-coughing frontman Mike Doty, our resident philosopher Al Genie tackles love, and we play the worst with Mike Makings and Kristen Lundberg. And now, here's your host, a man who could have sworn a high five was a legitimate Valentine's Day present, Justin Kaufman.
A little pat on the back? That doesn't work? I thought that worked. Oh, man, I'm screwed. Good evening, everybody. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, broadcasting till 11 o'clock tonight. We got your back here on Valentine's Day. What a beautiful Valentine's Day for you. Tom Skilling came through, gave you a nice day for you to run around last minute and try to find a gift that wasn't picked over at the local grocery store. I actually did all that over the weekend. I think as you get to know me, I mean, I'm only in year two here at WGN, but you will know that most of the time I'm late to the game.
You procrastinate a little bit.
I'm the guy who goes into the...
For certain things.
...is in the metro station, the Ogilvy station, going, wow, they're giving away roses? I'll take some of those roses. Oh, she's going to be so surprised. But you know what? This time around, and I think it's because our schedules have shifted, you know, because I work at night, you have the daytime, I just was more on top of it. So I actually had all of the ingredients. I told a story with Ro and Anna there. I had all the ingredients for the Valentine's Day for both my son and for my wife. And I just hadn't assembled them because I thought I would assemble during the day, you know? And so last night I found out, oh, no, we have to do that before 8 o'clock in the morning. So yeah. I got home last night after we did the show. And, yeah, I was sitting there at the table, like, drawing, saying, don't mess up.
Yeah, it's like Christmas, you know?
Yeah, it was very Christmas-like. And getting everything organized on the table so when the family woke up, it was assembled. And my favorite moment was after all of that, 1:30 in the morning probably. You know, where I'm like 1:15, I go to bed. I sneak into bed. I'm like, my wife turns over and goes, did you finish all that Valentine's stuff? I have a little faith. Like, I wanted to fool with her and be like, no, what? No, I was watching 24 Legacy. I taped it.
So much pressure.
It's one of the top holidays in my household.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like. I wish Thanksgiving was bigger. I like Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving seems I'll cook all day. Valentine's Day, you know, it's we're going to talk about Valentine's Day tonight. We'll talk about the origins, explore the meaning of love with Professor Al Genie. We had him on with the Seven Deadly Sins. We did this about a month ago. Great. We did the hour. We talked about the Seven Deadly Sins and sort of updated them for today. We're going to do the same with love and Valentine's Day tonight. Professor Al Genie is in studio. We'll talk with him about the history of this holiday, where it comes from and why we celebrate it. It's amazing. He has a great outline and notes, and he sent it to me, and I was reading it this afternoon. I was like, geez, there's a lot going on. Lupercus, the fertility god. We'll start there. That's where we'll start tonight. So that's coming up at 8 o'clock. Also tonight, former soul-coughing frontman, Mike Doty. How great is that? He's coming to Lincoln Hall on Saturday. He's going to join us. I'm excited to talk to him. You know, he's had such a tremendous career. Soul-coughing was such an amazing band in the 90s, broke up. Then he wrote a book about it. He just talked about it, how tumultuous his life was with that band. Not only that, but then just drug addiction, everything that sort of goes part and parcel with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, he's lived. So we'll talk to him about his career and his music and moving on. Mike Doty coming up later in the show. And we'll play the worst tonight as well. So, you know, we'll do a little love with Al Genie, and then we'll do a little anti-love with Mike Makings and Kristen Lundberg, two great comedians. Mike, a regular here on The Download. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago, starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right. It's 720 WGN. It's a download. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show. Kev Powell's going to join us a little bit later, too, to talk about his first day at spring training. How awesome is that? It's just amazing to think that the team that is in Mesa, Arizona right now is the World Series champ. Defending World Series champs. That's what you have to say now, right? how are the defending World Series champs doing? We'll talk with them. Also, two Lane Tech seniors, high school seniors, forego the school play and go right to the Rhino Fest at the Prop Theater. They're doing their own show off loop in Chicago. I can't wait to talk to Alex, Seth, about their show and about getting on stage before they even go to college. Yeah, man. One of these days I'll tell you about when I did my public access show, where I did before college as well. I moved out. I did public access before college. I didn't do theater, I did public access. No big deal. I don't make a big deal about it right now. I'll make it some other time. All right, let's do this. Let's do the carry out. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news to you at home. You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Well, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn resigned after it became clear he misled the public on what he was talking about in a call with a Russian ambassador. Classic Valentine's Day story. What? Oh, who are you texting? No one. Nothing. I'm not saying nothing. Let me be. I'm in love with the Russian ambassador. Also, that story, the Michael Flynn story, that's like a classic government cover-up. If it was like Family Feud and they were like, 100 people surveyed, what is a classic government cover-up? Lying about Russian ambassador sanctions, survey says, ding, number one answer. You know what I mean? Like, it's right out. That's classic government. That's like Ali North type stuff. Now, advisor Kellyanne Conway is being investigated by Congress for her Nordstrom flap, and still no word if Sean Spicer has lost the confidence of the president for being played by a woman. Anyway, the Trump administration has the feel of a Coach Hoiberg Bulls trying out different lineups. Got to get the right tempo, you know? You spread out. We got to figure out where the lies can be spread. Get the right spacing. But the big question today is how isolated Michael Flynn was with his dealings with Russia. The White House says the president knew of his lie, but stopped short in saying that they were involved in any way with the lie. To make things more fun, a Russian spy ship was spotted off the coast of Delaware, which is really just there for if the whole administration needs a quick getaway. Quick to the spy ship! I can't tell if this White House news is just a big chaotic clown show or if it's the plot from season 3 of 24. Like, they're right in the same... It's fine line. It really is. Just waiting for an old 80s actor to pull a mask off and be like, it's Kiefer Sutherland! The Chicago Board of Education sued the state today, claiming discriminatory patterns in school funding, essentially saying that the state was being unfair in how they fund CPS, relegating poor students of color to the, quote, back of the bus. State Board Chief Beth Purvis shot back, saying, you know, I haven't read it yet. That's essentially what she said. But they do have a plan to fund schools equally. They just haven't figured it all out yet. And adding fuel to the fire, Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis called it a fake fight between Rauner and Emanuel. Oh, man, I'd pay to watch those two fake fight any day, as long as in a cage with folding chairs. Lewis went on to say they didn't even know about the lawsuit, and she's underwhelmed by it all, which is the greatest comeback. I'm underwhelmed. When you hear that, you're just, like, so dejected. Oh, she's underwhelmed. Such an interesting political soap opera. So state versus city, and then city and state versus CTU. Did I get that right? It's like a bad DC Comics summer blockbuster. Now, who's fighting who? And which side is Aquaman on? Come on! You're losing me! Governor Rauner went to Facebook Live today to preview his budget address for tomorrow in Springfield. So many hearts, likes, frowny faces thrown across the video. I know we can't get anything done in Springfield, but can we both agree that Facebook Live political speeches? No. Lame. Stop doing it. I'd much rather have Rauner just give us a handheld tour of the governor's mansion. Here, take a look at this chair. It's all rocky and shaky. Diane, get out of here. As a matter of fact, political speeches and real-time shootings. There should be a button on Facebook that says, are you a politician or a gangbanger? No, you can't use it. I mean, it's getting terrible out there. The shooting of two young girls wasn't enough. Today, a two-year-old shot and killed in a car in North Lawndale. John Cass from the Chicago Tribune has a great article about politics in Springfield holding up a new concept that would make repeat offenders, gun charges essentially, subject to longer sentences if they shoot again. And it's a pretty standard concept. And I actually like what they're saying, and it's Kwame Raoul, State Senator Kwame Raoul wants to push it. But he's saying, and I can't tell if this is John just riling up his base, but he's saying that the Black Caucus in Springfield, some Chicago judges, and the Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle all oppose this idea, and they're going to do everything they can to make sure it doesn't happen. Really? Might be something to look for in the next couple weeks. That'd be great. Just make some movement. Do your job in some way, just a little bit, to say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Like, I know it's knee-jerk. I understand the concept. But when you have 11-year-old and a 12-year-old and now a 2-year-old shot in the middle of gang crossfire, write a bill. Today, CTA riders on the red line at the Addison stop were subjected to random bag checks by Homeland Security officers. Some wonder if it was part of an ICE raids, the raids that we've been hearing about happening in big cities. But the police say that it's just a way to help with safety and to curb terrorism. Okay. And if you can't produce ID and or they find out you're here illegally, well, that's just gravy. Chicagoans took to social media to warn everyone of the bag checks and rumored raids because nothing makes you safer than copying and pasting on Facebook. That's how Paul Revere would have done it back in the day if he had social media. Don't share this is the new share this, right? Harrison Ford's in hot water for landing his plane in the wrong spot at LAX today. He landed it right next to where a 747 was taking off. The FAA wants to know more about his error, but also about they want to question his co-pilot. What was he thinking? No, sir, you didn't answer the question. Why didn't you park where we were supposed to? Mike Chewbacca. In late night talk show news, is that a thing? I guess that's still a thing. I guess the anti-Trump joking and clowning of Stephen Colbert has moved him to the top in the ratings. Yep, he pulled ahead of Jimmy Fallon, and that is news for the Circular File. News about late night talk show ratings. Next, we're going to talk about the ratings for a Celebrity Apprentice. Both of those things. We don't need it. The Brookfield Zoo's hoping that their polar bears will have a love connection on Valentine's Day. They brought in a female polar bear for their breeding program. My guess, the male polar bear buys a Walgreens teddy bear, and they end up fighting till she goes to bed early. That's a more accurate Valentine's Day, right? These flowers are from Jewel. I said good day. It's a callback. And weather, this is the second hottest Valentine's Day on record, and it was 50 degrees today, too. Ho-ho! Nailed it. In sports, the Cubs and Sox back at it today. Spring training officially underway, but do we really need 5 weeks of split squads and getting to know Michael Kopech stories? They should shave it down to 2 weeks and start baseball March 1st. You know what? Call it a byproduct of global warming. You can play now in March. Wilson Contreras looks to be John Lester's catcher, and Schwarbs has been cleared somewhat to also get back behind the plate. First full squad practice is Saturday. The NBA trade deadline is coming up, and the rumors are heating up that the Bulls could deal. One name that continues to come up is Whitney Young product Jahlil Okafor. He played at Duke. He was a lottery pick for the Sixers. He plays the same position as Joel Embiid, so he's expendable. I like it. I would much rather see Okafor at the UC every night than Feliciano, Carter Williams, McDermott, Mirotic, Lopez, and anyone else not named Jimmy Butler, right? Dwayne Wade out tonight as the Raptors are in town. Somehow the Bulls will win this game. They always seem to beat up on the Raptors. This is an interesting stat. The Raptors haven't beaten the Bulls since 2013. How about that? And finally tonight, Burger King Israel trotted out a new adult meal for Valentine's Day. It came complete with a burger, fries, and a satin blindfold and a feather tickler. Because nothing says sexy than being tickled in the dark after you've eaten a Whopper. That's the carryout for February 14th. 2007. We got a Valentine's Day special tonight. For all drinks ordered, we're only giving you one straw. Why? Because you got to share. All right, more to come. Coming up, Mike Doty from Soul Coughing joins us to talk about his big show at Lincoln Hall this weekend, and we'll break down the origin story of Valentine's Day. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
Oh, love is in the air, Justin. Love is in the air.
Are you a family that does Valentine's Day in the morning, or do you do it at night?
You know, it's funny because our shifts, you, mm-hmm. me, Pete, you know, are what they are. I kind of get off the hook during the week, so Valentine's Day, Monday through Friday, given a bit of a pass, although I will pay it back in spades when I take Mrs. Rob to go see 50 Shades Darker, Less Dark, More Dark,
yeah.
Whatever the new one is out that's out right now.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for the review of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I took her to the first one. I was the only straight guy in the theater. It was interesting. It was fun.
I've not seen the movie.
I will admit, Justin, I will admit it was not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Not in my wheelhouse, but not that bad.
I didn't realize this. My wife called it out. This is how I don't pay attention to the movies. I saw her and whoever the star of that, her name is Dakota Johnson.
That is Don Johnson's daughter?
That's exactly what I said. I go, Dakota Johnson. Is that Don Johnson? She just looked at me like, where have you been? That's like a magazine story from 11 years ago. And I'm like, oh, I just missed it. I missed it.
In 50 Shades of Grey, the first one, I'm looking at her and all I can picture is Don Johnson now making love to this guy. Because she does look like her dad a little bit. A little bit.
He's got like the white with the pastels.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got the Porsche. I can feel it coming.
All of a sudden, Tubbs comes breaking in.
You know? Tubbs, may I join this bust? All right. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're coming up this Saturday, February 18th. Lincoln Hall is going to host one of rock's most original singer-songwriters. Give it up for Mike Doty.
Oh, my days, they were so easy till I kissed you in that door. Now my arms feel so empty, like they never did before. And I can't believe I found you in that town. I can't believe it's true, I can't believe just how I'm missing you. Do not call, you never make a sound. No, at least not like you did when I was close to you, so sweet and so profound. And I can't believe I found you in that sound. I don't want to feel this insane, and I don't want to call you. But my hands can't stop remembering the way your hips move. And I can't believe I found you in that sound. I can't cease to see your face, and I can still feel all the traces of this feeling. I don't wanna come around. Let it leave me like a long breath. Let it dissipate or fade in the background. And I can't believe I found you in that town. No, I can't believe I found you in that town. I can't believe I found you in that sound. I can't believe I found you in that. Can't believe I found you in that.
Doty is a well-known musician for his voice, both singing and writing. He was a frontman for Soul Coughing, who exploded on the scene in the mid to late 90s. But Doty has moved on from those days and all told has produced 9 solo records. His latest album is called The Heart Watches While the Brain Burns. Doty is also an author. He told his story of the tumultuous times with the band Soul Coughing and his addiction to drugs in 2012 memoir, The Book of Drugs. And it's a pleasure to welcome Mike Doty to The Download tonight. Mike, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Justin. It's great to be here.
I'm interested in, you've done so much work. You've been such a prolific a musician for so many years. You know, when you're writing solo records and you're putting together new work, how does your music evolve? How do you think that it moves from one album to the next?
Well, you know, every time I put out an album, somebody points out to me how different it was from the last album. And I sort of look up and go, oh, yeah, apparently so. It's really not premeditated. I guess it just has to do with the circumstance and, you know, who I'm working with. And, you know, I mean, it could come down to, like, when I'm writing it, if I'm writing it while I'm on the road or I'm writing it at home or, you know, on vacation or whether or not... you know, what kind of gear I have, and it just really kind of flows organically from circumstance.
Are you the kind of artist who, you know, you could tell what kind of mood and where you are in your life by looking at the different albums that you produce?
I definitely can, but it takes me about a decade. to listen back and go, oh, wait a minute. I know exactly what was going on when I wrote this thing.
You are on tour. You know, you're coming to Lincoln Hall. Talk about just the life of being on tour and continue, because you've been a musician who has played arenas, to playing living rooms. I mean, talk about the different places that you play and you know, the life being on tour and what you're most comfortable with.
Well, I'm lucky in that I enjoy the life. I enjoy touring. I enjoy the other musicians I'm with. I enjoy songs. I enjoy the audience. You know, not everybody who signs up for it likes it. And at some point they discover that it's not for them. But, you know, people that persist for their whole lives doing this tend to thrive in this environment. And that really is all it is just I love it and I wake up every day and I want to do it. It is a drive to continue to create music just on a daily basis.
I mean, you have such a distinct and memorable voice. People recognize your voice from the music that you do now all the way back to Soul Coughing. Are you conscious of the fact that your voice stands out? Do you try to keep that consistent, or do you play with your voice and try to change the way you sound?
Well, you know, it's funny for singers because the way your voice sounds, and you know this because you're a radio guy, the way it sounds when you're talking and, you know, basically what it sounds like in your head is different than from what it sounds like, you know, when other people hear it, much less like over a microphone or on a recording. So oftentimes what I think I sound like is not actually what I sound like. And I'm sort of horrified when I listen back to a tape of a show or something. There's a certain amount of manipulation you can do when you're making a record, but, you know, I've been looking at videos that just fans have been taking of the shows I've been doing, and it's like, wow, I am not who I thought I was.
We're talking with Mike Doty. He's got a show coming up on Saturday at the Lincoln Hall, February 18th. His new album is called The Heart Watches While the Brain Burns, you know, a former frontman for Soul Coughing and, of course, his solo record for the last couple decades. You know, you have been someone who, you know, also we just talked about in the lead about, you know, being an author. You wrote your story and the Book of Drugs. And I want to ask you just about your life. You know, you continue to tour. You love what you do. But it's a life that, you know, we just had Shep Gordon on, and he talked about repping all these 80s rock stars, and he would say, if I represent you, you're going to get famous and it'll probably kill you. You know, essentially talking about the idea that there's so much excess, there's so much sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I mean, thinking about that time and what you went through, what is it about the music or the scene of being a rock star that attracts all of that?
Well, I mean, I think it's just mostly has to do with the fact that if you're making anything that resonates with other people, you're drawing from some kind of pain. And I think it has a lot more to do with the pain than, you know, whatever, you know, the quote unquote scene is like, or that you're playing in bars, because you can find drugs and alcohol anywhere. You know, you can find it in a Ramada Inn in Omaha. You don't need to be at Madison Square Garden to get high. It's just a question of people who are looking to understand their pain through music. I know that sounds corny, but that really is the case. And, you know, people look to medicate their pain.
To you as a musician, I mean, that pain is always going to be there, depending on what your background is and you
sure.
know, how you came up and all that. Is it really just a question of how you moderate it or how you keep it in control or how you use it for good as opposed to falling into traps like medicating it?
Well, I mean, in terms of drugs and alcohol, I just can't do them, like, period. That's just the deal. Like, no matter what happens, and it was something that made me very angry when I realized it, like, I just can't do it. I'm going to go off the rails the moment I step on the train car. But in terms of being just a compulsive, that can be harnessed and used in incredible ways, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of just friendships and being dedicated to your life, as well as being dedicated to art.
You know, for you, I mean, it's such tremendous hits with Soul Coughing. I think of Super Bon Bon and Circle and other tracks. But in the Book of Drugs and in interviews, you've talked about how rocky of a time that was for your life. Can you divorce the idea that those times are really difficult, but those songs were accepted all over the world and continue to be played on the radio? So when you hear a song like that, does it bring you back, or have you been able to separate the bad times with the good songs?
Oh, I've been able to separate to enough of a degree that I can live with it. And I know that it means a lot to people, and that, ultimately is much more important. And I think even when I had a terrible relationship with those songs, I always realized that, look, it doesn't belong to me. It's out in the world. It belongs to the listeners. So ultimately, even my acceptance of it is much less important than how people, you know, take the music into their lives.
Mike, you come back to Lincoln Hall on Saturday. Chicago has been a place that you've toured, you know, extensively throughout your career. And you've talked about how much you love the music and you love the experience and you love the audience. You know, you'll have a lot of fans that will be out on Saturday that have followed your career. What does it mean to you to be able to step on stage at the Lincoln Hall and play your music to Chicago?
I mean, I've played, I remember playing the Lounge Acts in 1994. So Chicago and I have a long and loving relationship that I am glad continues.
Mike Doty, his album is The Heart Watches While the Brain Burns. He's going to be on stage at Lincoln Hall this Saturday, February 18th. Mike, I can't thank you enough for taking some time off. I know you're on tour, and we appreciate it. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Really appreciate it.
Like I said, the Chicago Bulls right now up 20. There's something about the Toronto Raptors. I think every year it's funny, Panionovich will come on and we'll talk about the Bulls and be like, the only way the Bulls do anything is if they match up with the Raptors in the playoffs. And there's a startling stat that I saw today that the Bulls have not lost to the Toronto Raptors since 2013. Isn't that crazy? Also, I just jinxed it. Because there's no way. I don't know why I'm looking at any score that's not with 4 minutes play in the fourth quarter in basketball, right? Anyway. Valentine's Day today. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Professor Al Genie is here, our resident philosopher here to the download. We're going to talk about the origin story of Valentine's Day, and also we're going to get into the philosophy of love. I'm ready. I'm jumping in. I'm open-minded. I'm optimistic. I got a positivity to me tonight. I'm not going to approach this with any sort of sarcasm.
Right.
You know? I've been known to do that. Like, I've closed myself off. I did a lot of the sort of emotional, feely type stuff. I'm like, nah. I'd rather tell a joke. Right?
I think social media gets me that way, too. Because when I see people posting all their sappy things,
you're like,
a part of me like wants to push back. Even though I like it, I'm liking, my finger was liking a lot of stuff today. Boom, 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 boom.
How many heart-shaped pizzas did you like?
I liked a lot of heart-shaped pizzas.
That's the society we're in now where it's not how many heart-shaped pizzas did you eat. It's how many did you like on social media. Oh, I liked a lot. I liked like eight. It's crazy. There were so many heart-shaped pizzas.
I might have even loved a few of the heart. If they were really strong, I might have loved a few. Spent a lot of my time deciding if I should go like or love. Or a ha-ha, or a wow, you know.
I told you what my son, in the crosstalk with Ro, I told Ro, and he said, send him to me. But I think it's great. It's also spoiler alert, I realize. It's a spoiler, too, if you're not a Star Wars fan like yourself. This gives away a huge plot point. I was like, he said, hey, Dad, I love you more. This was in the card that I got this morning. I love you more than Emperor Palpatine loves the dark side.
I know, I saw that.
That's pretty darn good. That's pretty good, right?
I saw that picture, and I was like, I wish I understood what that meant.
It's, you know, like I said, spoiler alert. So if you...
This is in the new, the brand new Star Wars.
This is all stuff from the like the originals and the second wave stuff. Anyway,
it's very creative.
There's something about it where I'm like, what was the thought pattern there? Like, just the process to put that on a card. It's like, he's got a future in Hallmark.
Yeah.
You know? I could easily see that being a Family Guy joke.
Yeah.
And it's got like that kind of vibe to it. I'm like, what an interesting. I mean, that is real love, you know. The Emperor loves the dark side. I get it. He makes it. It's like that's Jada and Will love.
I have family in the card industry.
Oh, that's right.
And I look at a lot of other cards. I observe the card industry and. Yeah, that's a big seller.
Feel free to let your family steal. I put it up on social media, so it's free now. Low-hanging fruit. Consider
somebody's going to steal that. You watch out.
I know. It'll be
one of your lesser brands.
It will be. It'll be a new joke on Everybody Loves Kevin on CBS. Like, I love you as much as the Emperor loves the dark side. And I'll be like, it'll be a huge laugh track. And be like, once again, they took.
Watching the Grammys, speaking of CBS, they have like shows. I mean, I know that it's a network
do,
of TV, but I was like, wait, Joe McHale is on a show on CBS? And Joey Tribbiani's got a new show on CBS?
I will say it's interesting, the story today that Stephen Colbert is beating Jimmy Fallon in the ratings. And I just question, and I like Stephen Colbert. I do. I'm not necessarily sold on what he's doing on CBS. And to be fair, I mean, you and I, we're on the air. We'd miss it, right? I don't do too much DVRing of late night talk shows. But I just wonder if it's that same concept that we see where CBS shows over the years, whether it be Everybody Loves Raymond or Two and a Half Men or, or Big Bang Theory, that CBS, for whatever reason, has done a tremendous job of sort of breeding loyalty. And in that, all of their shows, whether it's Mike and Molly or the Joey Tribbiani show or whatever, they're always in the top. The new Kevin James is like the number one show on TV. And you're like, but it's not the number one show on TV. It's not good. And so you have to ask yourself, like, well, why is it? I mean, they've obviously figured it out. And so when you read that CBS's late night talk show is the number one talk show, you're kind of like, all right. I mean, I don't know if there's a level playing field. I don't know what it is. It just right away, alarm bells go off where I'm like, there's something about what CBS does, and I believe it to be a good thing. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just, whatever they do to, for that loyalty on the television, it works.
I just think that as a fan of television, I think that they are continuing to be a network that produces, like, comedies, which, I mean, I know there's a couple on other networks, but when was the last time you watched an ABC sitcom? Yeah.
You're right. I mean, they double down. They keep the formula going, so at least there's consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I would like to say, I mean, maybe it's funny because the show that the Grammys host was James Corden, and I never watched his show, but because he has done such a good job of being outside of his show, meaning he's a viral hit on social media with the different bits he does, I know who he is. But I don't think I've once ever watch a James Corden show.
No, I'll
and I know that I love his DJ. Oh man, why am I blanking on his name? Great comedian. He was in that movie we saw, the indie movie in New York. Watts, Reggie Watts.
Oh, he's his DJ?
Scott Aukerman guy, yeah.
Really?
Reggie Watts is the DJ for James Corden.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't that weird? You're like, what? I thought you were all over Comedy Bang Bang and other things, but
he's more of an outsider comic.
Yeah, he's there.
I'm just familiar with. I'm like, oh god, here's another Carpool Karaoke. 9 million people are going to share. That's like how I know James Corden.
Right. He replaced the Carpool Karaoke. Replaced the Jimmy Fallon playing instruments, little kid instruments.
Oh, the little kid instruments.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about
with
the Mariah Carey's.
Yeah, and he did Carly Rae, one of my faves.
We love it. We love it when our pop stars do something crazy. All right. Also, we're playing the worst tonight. So we're going to talk with Al Genie coming up here at 8 o'clock, and we're really going to get into the philosophy of love, the origin story of Valentine's Day, share some interesting facts and figures and stats. But we're also tonight playing the worst, which will inevitably be an anti-love, anti-Valentine's Day segment for prizes. That's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. I've got a worst. The worst, you know what's the worst, Pete? When the parking validation doesn't work. The worst.
Yeah. So like, what do? You have to go back and
that's what you got to. You got to make a determination if the $5 is worth it. And I'm like, I know you did this on purpose. Like, it automatically in my store, I'm like, you know it. I have a great story about for Valentine's Day.
It's a bait and switch, man.
Yeah,
I think Lisa Madigan should look into this.
Donald Trump, where's the tweet?
Uh huh.
Give me a tweet on the parking validation not working.
Are you a scam guy?
A scam guy?
Yeah, like my wife accuses me of being a scam guy. Everything's a scam. Like everything's going up against you.
So here's it real quick because we got to get to the news.
Sorry.
The best story is I go to get something for Valentine's Day for my wife. They mark it up about $5 at the register. Yeah, I go. I then take them back to the where it was, and I'm like, nah, this is what the price is, you know? So I'm the guy on the side that the line's all backing up because I'm getting $5 back on my card. I go to the parking validation, didn't work. They got their $5 back. It's almost like they hit a little button underneath the counter. Yep. Okay. We're getting our $5 off this guy.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I can't help but get a smile on my face here in that song. Night at the Roxbury, of course. Our heads are bobbing in studio right now. Tonight we thought we would take a little bit of time to talk about Valentine's Day. Of course, today, Valentine's Day 2017. We'll talk a little bit about the origin story of the holiday, but also what is love, as we hear from the song. And, of course, what we can do when it comes to love in our lives. In studio with us tonight, our old friend, good friend, the Download's resident philosopher, Professor Al Genie. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. Good to see you, bud. How are you?
Wonderful to see you, and I love the Valentine's gear that you have on. It's really, really charming.
Thank you.
I love
Thank
it
you.
With the little bunny ears, the whole thing. Nice, very nice. You're into it. You're into it.
I'm really into it. All right, you know, I mean, we did this about a month ago. We talked about the seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah,
we did. Just sort of going through all and how it's sort of updated over the years and where the origins for. So we thought we'd do that with love.
Right.
Why don't we start tonight with an intro? What is love, Al?
Well, you know, there's different kinds of love. I think we forget that. There's eros, which is really sexual or emotional or desire, and kind of the rawest kind of love that we know of. And there's philia, brotherly love, family love, friendship, when you care for a brother, when you care for a parent, et cetera, et cetera. And the highest form of love, say the philosophers, is agape. That is, love of God, love of higher ideas and higher issues. And then, of course, from the philosophical point of view, there's platonic love. That is, non-sexual love, objective love, love of ideas and love of notions and love of things. But today in modern romantic love is a combination, I think, of eros and philia.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, it's interesting because, well, we'll get through this through the hour, but, I mean, in the past, have those types of love been able to become combinations, become intertwined?
Well, they're always combinations. These are human beings. I mean, from time immemorial, long before there were Valentine's, there was these Bacchus days of wine and fertility in the Greek states where no questions were asked. And Plato even talks about it in the Republic that twice a year, party time, and that's how you have children, et cetera, et cetera. But I think too commonly, we either associate love with higher planes that sometimes people can get to, but otherwise the basic stuff of human beings, and it's usually associated with, sexuality as its lowest common denominator.
All right, well, let's talk about the combination. You cut you off, like eros and philias.
I think the new romantic tradition really tries to blend eros and philia. And I think what happens is love has become, in our modern times, the central theme in everybody's biography. When we find ourselves, we must lose ourselves in another. You've heard all this stuff. I mean, it says it again and again, one is the loneliest number, that kind of thing. Love is supposed to be our true destiny, and it's something we're supposed to pursue. And without it, we're not fulfilled. And I think we've made that a false standard.
A false
standard that you can't really be fulfilled without loving somebody else. And at the same time, think about this. Come on, we've both been around a little bit. Love makes us stupid. Love makes us mad. Love is destructive. And failed love is perhaps the purest form of
unhappiness. It's amazing to think about how impactful or central love is to our lives.
I mean,
in the way that you're right. Like if you break up with somebody or you lose a love or lose a loved one, I mean, it has such a detrimental effect.
Effect on us. And we feel that we're left and alone. And I think real love is this feeling. Aristotle talked about friendship is one soul in two bodies. And we've kind of absorbed that without really thinking about that, without really understanding what that fully means. Because I think when we say to someone you love them, that's a very profound and complicated thing. We use the word love like the word like. We've been in conversations with people that use like every sentence.
We were just talking on social media. You love or like, it's the same thing. Right.
But I do think there is a difference. And I think there's a difference between liking someone, being comfortable with someone, and loving someone. And if we're really lucky, we get some of that together. But I want to argue later that the hardest thing in life is to get some of these things together, to get friendship eros and real love in one relationship.
You know, okay, as we talk about this, I mean, we'll get to the origin story of Valentine's Day, and maybe, you know, I don't consider you to be a love historian, although, you know, you're doing a good job so far.
I've had seven great wives, so I've had a couple.
Well, I mean, when we think about the role of love in our lives, I mean, does that go back? I mean, you mentioned Plato. You mentioned this concept of the two different times in you know, the Republic. This idea of party time, but I mean, does it go back to what you just mentioned about love and how important it is to the lives that we live today? Has it always been important throughout human history?
Well, you know, think about this. Think about basically what this love is species beneficial. I mean, sexual excitement in regard to each other, to like someone, to be concerned about eros, is necessary. And there's an argument that can be made from biology that sexuality, our interest in sexuality, the pleasure we get from sexuality is the only way we're a species. Otherwise, we wouldn't continue to procreate, et cetera, et cetera. So part of love, as we understand eros in a physicality, really is a driving force to keep people together, and it's species beneficial. So whether you like it or not, we're driven to do this thing, right? One of the madnesses of solitary confinement, of course, is that men go mad alone and abuse themselves too much, because it's still a drive even when no one is around. But putting that aside, love connected to friendship is this wonderful blending that we all want but find it very difficult to find.
Professor Al Genie's in studio tonight. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at the Loyola University of Chicago. He's also a resident philosopher here. We're doing sort of the philosophy of love. It's funny, I was talking about it last night. I took that class at Columbia College. I can't remember a thing. I'm not going to lie to you. I kept the books, though, so I could keep it on my shelf. So if anyone came over, they're like, oh, philosophy of love.
Yeah.
Well, this guy thinking. Yeah, but it's somewhere in a box in the garage somewhere. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and let's get to the origin story, where Valentine's Day comes from.
Good idea.
And then also, you know, as we continue tonight, 312-981-7200. We'll talk a little bit later about Al Genie's paradoxical propositions and presumptions about love, which is a good list. I think you go 11 or 12 deep. Yeah. You did a lot of work for this segment.
A lot of work.
I appreciate it, Professor. We'll be back in a second.
Love, love, love. Why'd you take so long to come to me? Oh, baby. And love, love, your love. Tell me, were you high?
Welcome back to Download here in 720 WGN. We're talking about the philosophy of love on this Valentine's Day. If you're you know, just exchange some chocolate, maybe some roses, thinking about a little Netflix and chill. Before you do that, maybe a conversation about the origin story of this holiday. In studio with us, our resident philosopher Al Genie is a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago. You know, let's talk about it. Where does Valentine's Day come from? Because you talked about love and the concept of love, and we get that, and it's permeated throughout the human civilization.
Right.
Where does this idea of a holiday come from?
Well, the holiday itself, there was, in the Roman festivals, it was called, if I get my Latin correctly, Lupercalia, which was the fertility god and the version of Pan. And so this is when couples were in the mood for mating. This is when couples pledged themselves to each other. Just think about it. These cycles are also connected to the cycles of the land when things were growing these times. But in the third century, there happened to be...
Third century talk. Here we go.
I wasn't there, mind you. I didn't come on the scene to the fourth century. There were three or four St. Valentines running around. There were three or four. But the church picked out one, St. Valentino from Rome, who was buried in Via Flaminia outside of Rome. And he was supposedly a martyr at the time when the Catholic Church still couldn't be an official church for converting people and then marrying them. And it's supposedly the case that the night before he was executed, he married this couple and said, "I am your Valentine." And that went on.
That
was his calling card. Now, the church made him a saint and part of the martyrology, in fact. And to prove that he's really a saint, he's got three different heads in three different places, vials of blood all over the place, which always happens.
Always happens, right.
And it's always a funny thing. But they decided somewhere in 1969 to cut that out, you know, that he's no longer a part of the saints, but they kept him there. Now, the reason they kept him there, because it became very, very popular, and extremely popular. But before we go on to how it developed further, and yet there's this paradox in the Christian notion of St. Valentine's, because in the Christian tradition, the body is to be reviled. The mm-hmm. body is part of the mortality of our human condition. The body is something that failed us from Adam and Eve. And so St. Augustine and St. Thomas suggest that you can't have pleasure in sex even with your wife, that the only reason for sex is for procreation. And yet against that were the common man's feeling. What other comfort was there in life? What other warm moment was there to have?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the marriage and talk about Valentine, but this concept of love and sex.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you just mentioned, you talked about the Catholic Church really not necessarily at that time wanting, really talking about the body at all. Well, but at the same time, you know, love has been something that's been throughout civilization. When did they become at odds, those two things?
Well, I don't know if they come at odds, but I think the connection is love and sexuality. Love is a way to control sexuality. That you have a commitment to someone, you have a passionate commit to someone, and you stay with them because it's hormonal, it's pheromones. You want to be around the person. I think everyone in life, if they haven't, I'm really sorry for them, has had someone over whom they are passionately attracted to. Now, that could be courtly love, and that certainly happened under Eleanor of Aquitaine, where one was passionately committed to someone and yet never showed it.
Unrequited,
and never acted on it. It was supposed to be the highest form of love.
The highest form of love is the idea that you never act on?
Right, that you're passionately involved with that person but never act on it. That you feel that you want to be drawn to that person, et cetera, et cetera. You feel all these things, mm-hmm. but you don't cross the line. That, to me, sounds a little, you know, that's a difficult concept to deal with. I think the reality is
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's actually lauded. That's a thing that
they lauded that as you are driven for them. So you're driven to them, but you don't touch them. So it's perfect love. It's unrequited.
That's considered perfect love.
You know, the Virgin Queen kind of thing.
Sneak around and don't let her know she's there. That's perfect love.
But I think, in fact, that we are sexual animals, and I think we sometimes forget that. I mean, there's a whole argument, you know, modern sexual harassment and workplace, so on and so forth. We want to be very careful about that. But the reality is you can't tell jokes anymore. You can't tell things. It's never been really proper civilized conduct. But the reality is at our lowest level, at a very basic, not the lowest level, at a very basic level, we are sexually driven. We are attracted to others. Mm-hmm. And it is a natural part of the human condition at the level of procreation, at the level of comfort, and the level of friendship.
Do you ever believe, I mean, as we talk about the role that religion plays in love and sex, do you believe there will be a time in human history where we go back to what we saw in the early days where there wasn't these stigmas attached to this stuff that they could come together? Or are we at a point now where we are?
I think there's always been stigmas attached to sex. I think Freud is right. Sex, we're driven to it and we're frightened by it, and we have to make rubrics about it. We have to delimit it. We can't let people have it all the time. We have to put all these gateposts around it. So I think, in point of fact, we are probably, you know, this is post-Aquarian age, and I'm a child of the age of Aquarius, and the age of Aquarius did a couple things for us besides giving us rock and roll. It said women can have sexual pleasure on their own. It said you could have sex without the need for procreation. It said that sex is a joyous expression of self. And I think, putting the excesses aside, since the 60s, I think we've evolved. Listen, we're sitting in a country right now where gay sex, gay marriage, is allowable. That was beyond the concept 50 years ago, beyond understanding. And I think we're being more honest with our sexuality and more forthright with our sexuality. I mean, the biggest issue around schools right now, what do you do with certain students who are
transgendered in bathrooms, right?
And how we handle that and what we do with that, and that these are really people and they're responding to their sexual inclination.
Well, it's interesting that the news, I mean, as we read this stuff and we celebrate Valentine's Day and we talk about love and sex, which we don't usually do here on the radio. But, you know, I have to say, I mean, you think about a lot of the current events and the things that are happening in our life. They do surround and revolve around love and sex, and it continues to permeate the same topics and concepts that you're talking about from the third century.
Because we are human beings, and we are drawn to each other, gay or straight, we are drawn to each other. And I think that that's something to deny that is wrong. But the church has always recognized it's got to be controlled, or you have madness and mayhem on your hands, you know, and that's the issue.
All right, so let's talk about Valentine's
Day.
I mean, because the age of Valentine's Day is upon us.
Right.
I mean, as you think about the 21st century being the time in which this has become an industry on itself.
And I mean, it started a long time ago. It did start in 477, and I was there for that one. Yeah. When we used Valentine to mean loved one or sweetheart, and you gave some sort of flowers. And in 1840, the first commercial cards were published in the United States of America. And in 1969, as I said, the Roman Church dropped St. Valentine as a special saint, but not out of the martyrology. But here's the stuff that drives... I can't believe this. I found these statistics. I checked four times to make sure they're right. The average annual spending at Valentine's Day last year, 2016, was $19.7 billion. Wow. $19.7 billion. Now, the biggest holiday is Christmas. Second is?
I don't know.
Halloween.
Halloween, yeah.
It's come out of nowhere. In the last 30 years, Halloween has become this, wow.
I had 4th of July. I just started thinking not in my even head, like,
Fourth
yeah,
of
not
July
even close.
Is not even close.
There's not and enough now, American flags and Coors Light to sell for 4th of July.
180 million plus cards in America alone. 200 million roses distributed. And on average, in America, men spend about $133 on their Valentine.
Wow.
And women spend about $62 on Valentine's present.
And it's amazing. It has become commercial in the way that Valentine's Day is. You can't skip it. There's no longer. I've talked probably ad nauseum in the last week about how my parents would have a card and a Kit Kat bar.
That's it.
And that was it. And I'd be like, oh, my dad said, I love you on a card. And I thought that it still stays with me. I'm 42 years old. And that was all it needed to be.
Yeah,
but today, I mean, you walk through Walgreens in November and they've got all the hearts out and they're ready to go. They want to sell this
stuff. A colleague
of
mine, whose name I will not repeat on the radio right now, suggested to me this week, even though his wife and he are in a kind of stasis in their marriage, if either one of them forgets Valentine's Day, they don't speak to each other.
You can't forget it.
You can't. Well, you can't now anymore because it's out there so much.
No.
I have this double whammy. My wife's birthday is next week, too. This is a big week, ladies and gentlemen.
We heard that, too,
a lot.
It's
a big week.
It is a big week. I mean, I like it. I think about the sentiment, and I think about the way that I get a chance to write on paper or be able to show some sort of token of my affection, mandated.
Right.
It's not spontaneous. It's not May. It's not just a moment. But there's this concept that I actually like that I'm almost on deadline. If that makes sense?
Here's the danger in it. It's what happens in the holiday seasons right now. You're obligated. The obligations come overwhelming. That what do we do for this? How do we handle this? Do I send a Christmas card to this person? 2 years in a row, they didn't send us a card. Am I obligated to send them a card? We have to buy a gift for so on and so forth.
Is it chocolate and flowers? Flowers and chocolate, teddy bear. What do I do?
What do I do now? In fact, it is candy, flowers, jewelry, greeting cards, an evening out, clothing, gift certificate, cash. Cash, I find it always works. No, and that's the last thing we do. If you gave cash... Romance is over at that point. Romance is seriously over.
Maybe I should rethink my morning
perhaps,
gift this morning.
Perhaps we could talk off
Here's
air.
A 10. Don't spend it all in one place. Al Gini is my guest. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business, Loyola University of Chicago. He's also our resident philosopher. And we've had some fun on the show. We've talked about vacations. We've talked about voting. We did a whole thing on voting. The Seven Deadly Sins, which was great. I really enjoyed that segment. And tonight we're talking about love. This is something that, in a strange way, Valentine's Day and all of the commercialism around it, the chocolates and the and the cards, and they substitute, in a way, the actual concept of getting in touch with your feelings.
If a holiday is supposed to remind us of a happy thing, then it's really worthwhile. And frankly... You want to explain Valentine's Day? Explain music. What's music about? Are they not 90% love songs? You know, is it not always about a romance? It's not about interactions and interactions between individuals. And I think we forget. We are ratio animalis. We are rational animals. And that animalis is really important in us. In fact, I want to argue, and I did this very carefully. I want to argue, I think lust gets a bad name. In this society, I really do. When we say lust, you say that's really terrible. But lust is really enthusiastic desire for sexual activity. But be very careful here. The full pleasure, the full sexual activity, the full pleasure of sexual activity requires the presence of another, a partner, a fellow traveler. And there must always be some object to that lust, that is a partner or an other. So lust is the desire to please and the desire to be pleased. And so, believe it or not, Thomas Hobbes says, lust is about two drives and two appetites together, when two individuals want to satisfy each other. And I think that is a happy way to look at sexuality, that you lust after somebody, but that you, but your pleasure cannot be pleasure unless the other person has pleasure.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about Al Genie's paradoxical propositions and presumptions about love when we come back here after the news with Rob Martyr. Al Genie, of course, our resident philosopher here on The Download. He is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago. More on our special one-hour look at love and Valentine's Day. The origins. We just did the origin story for Valentine's Day. I can't wait for that movie to come out. Right? Sounds good. Vials of blood and heads everywhere. There's a lot to be done. It's going to be a Tom Hanks vehicle. I can feel it. Thanks, Rob. Rob, I don't say it enough. So in love with you. We're talking Valentine's Day and the philosophy of love tonight here on The Download with our resident philosopher, Al Genie. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago. And he has come up with a program tonight. I mean, I'm really impressed with the notes and the outlines. And you're really doing work, Al. Well, I should pay you once. Well, once. I should maybe wait, in our wait, career wait, once.
I'm not being paid?
Yeah. You're getting paid with love and true, adoration. That's true. So at the beginning, we talked about the origin story of Valentine's Day and St. Valentine. We talked a little bit about what love is. And now we want to get to, which I love, this is your 11-point presentation. This is Al Genie's Paradoxical Propositions and Presumptions about Love. Yeah. And these are really interesting.
Well, I've been thinking about this a long time. Truly, I have. And let me start off. I'm going to be as serious as we can without breaking into laughter that we may fall in love. We may feel we are swept away. We may feel there is real rapture. And I really believe in rapture. I think we come closest to rapture, either falling in love with somebody or having an epiphany in regard, a spiritual epiphany. But love is not an effortless union. Love is labor, real effort, an act of choice, an act of will. It has to be reinforced.
Yeah, so the idea of being smitten. Or the idea of having some sort of, oh, my God, I love this person
right.
I just met. That's not love.
No, it may be. It may be smitten. It may actually prove to be love. But you got to work at
it. You got to work at it. And it's got to be a two-way street for all the stalkers out there.
Right. You know? It's got to be a two-way street. And unfortunately,
I've been in that situation where there's people I'm like, oh, I'm just so in love with her. Oh, my God. It doesn't work unless there's work.
And I remember this wonderful line in a novel. The man says, but I love you. Does that mean nothing to you? And she says, unfortunately, no.
And
he had no line to come back from that.
I mean, it is something. I don't want to make it seem like I'm trying to. It is something,
say,
but it's not
like
love.
Friendship,
right?
If you're my friend and we don't talk to each other for 20 years, are we really friends? We may have been friends.
Needs a
but
new
if
word,
you don't,
right?
And we were associates and acquaintances. That's why I use friendship in a very careful way, because friendship means putting in time, putting in FaceTime, being concerned. It means you show up at my house at 3 o'clock in the morning. I got to take care of you. You're my friend. Don't show up at my house tonight. Trust me. And so I think the same thing with love.
Pebbles at your
window. You know, to say to your partner, I love you at the marriage altar, and to never say it again means what's going on here? And so I think that love is an effort. It's like loving a child. You have to do it every day. You can't say, hey, I need 2 days off. I'm locking you in the bathroom. There's some food, candy bars, and there's water, and you got a toilet. You'll be fine. Love is something you have to work at and maintain.
And that's what a lot of this is about. Number two, don't confuse not being lonely anymore with being in love.
Yeah, the teenager's fallacy. And unfortunately, the sad adult's fallacy as well, that I met somebody. I'm okay now. Well, maybe not. I mean, you just met somebody. Doesn't mean anything. Just because you're lonely.
Love is not necessarily.
Not being lonely anymore.
Well, I mean, as you pointed, number one, love is labor. Love is work.
Right.
Love is not necessarily, or at least what we're talking about here, an antidote to loneliness.
Right. And I think if you seek love as an antidote to loneliness, you'll never find true love. I think what you'll find is a partner, a convenience, a distraction. But I think love is an ob extra. I think we need companionship. But love is a special jewel. And I think it's an ob extra that it comes only with effort, only with willing it. I'm saying this as a loving husband, I hope. I find it very interesting. In the last year, I've learned to love my wife more because I'm so thankful for her And I'm being deadly serious right now. Maybe it's my age. I realize how lucky I am. Mm-hmm. And that's important in life.
Well, you need someone to grind up your pills.
I mean, that's... Actually, she saved my life three times this year, right?
I kid. I've known Al long enough to kid. All right, so let's do number three. Too many of us put more time, effort into selecting a car, home, or an expensive vacation than we do evaluating a prospective partner.
Right. I mean, she looks cute. She's well-dressed. She works downtown. She's a college graduate and vice versa. He's tall. He likes his mother, et cetera, et cetera. I that's not enough. I mean, and that's why dating is important. Here's this concept of you can mate overnight. I mean, come on. This is a real truth. I think 70% to 85%, this is a big sweep, of young males of my age group who had a Catholic or a Christian background went to their marriage beds virgins.
Really?
Yes, I guarantee it. And because for the Catholic Church in those days in the 50s, so here's the basic teaching of sex. No, don't. So there were two words, no and don't. And that you could, and for a woman to lose her virginity or to get pregnant, I mean, this doesn't make sense to a contemporary audience. If a girl got pregnant, she had to quit school. They had to go away. They had to get whatever it was
ostracized.
Yeah, they're totally ostracized.
It's a terrible way to start.
It's a terrible way to start that. But I think that, but now because of the casualness of things, because you meet somebody that's flirtatious and fashionable and charming, that's prima facie. You have to date a long time because otherwise, what happens is, 18 months, 2 years into the relationship, after six weeks to 6 months, you get married. You wake up in the morning, you look at the person next to you and say, who in the devil is this person? Hmm. Or a character trait comes out and says, I didn't know that about
you.
There
are several. I mean, it's hard to put that into a category because there are several cases where people say, I met my wife or my husband in first love. 2 months later, we got married. We're still married.
But I think as a general rule, I think people need to spend more time carefully. You wouldn't buy a house without checking out the electrical system and the furnace.
All right. Maybe that's a nice transition to number four. Erotic attraction. What are we talking about here?
I'm talking about great sex often fools us. I think sex is a catalyst for intimacy, but not a foolproof sign of love.
So you're saying it's a catalyst to intimacy. It's not intimacy.
It can be, but it's a catalyst to true intimacy. I think getting naked and making love isn't necessarily intimacy. It is intimacy of a kind. But I think as rational animals, true intimacy is tell me who you are. Tell me what you believe. Tell me what you think. So I think rather than denying sex, I think sex is an entree to intimacy. Maybe it's getting it over. I remember this one. Get it over. All right, we've had sex. Now let's find out who we are. Okay?
Right.
I'm not advocating that, but I am suggesting that don't confuse lust and love and sexuality with, you know, as
well,
as
it goes right into number five that you have here, which says it's hard to get lust, love, and like in the same relationship.
You know, I wrote about a whole chapter on this in a book that I did years ago, and perhaps this is the only true insight I'm guilty of as a thinker. It is really difficult to get lust, love, and like in the same relationship because too often we're attracted to someone and yet we love someone for their qualities, but we don't like them, we want to be around them. And I think the hardest thing in life is to have all three things in one relationship because it's a delicate balance. And they come in and they come out in a relationship. I understand that. But I think people confuse lust with love sometimes. They confuse, if I love them, then I'm going to have great sex. That doesn't follow at all. In fact, University of Chicago has proven that absolutely in a number of series that about 50% of Americans are comfortably monogamous, okay? They have sex about once a week. That's the average. About once a week, no other partners. But 30% of us have sex a few times a year or not at all. And 25% of women report being autoerotic and self-stimulating, so they don't need sex. And about 35% of men and women have some sort of sexual dysfunction. We're not wild and wicked guys anymore. You know, I think that sexuality isn't always the answer. And so you need this balance of all three. And it is so hard to do.
That's interesting. And it does feel like that's a show unto itself, how you lead up and how you can accomplish a relationship that has lust, love, and like all together. Al Jeany, my guest, the resident philosopher here at The Download. He is a professor of business ethics, a longtime author. Professor of Business Ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. A longtime author. He's got a lot of books. Check him out.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue this list because we've got some stuff. Love is scary. True love's unconditional. Love can rescue us. I'm still looking for love is annoying. I don't see that on here.
Oh, it is.
It is
oh,
on there?
Did I not list that?
I didn't see it. Oh, there's a second page. Good. Al Genie, my guest tonight on the download. Stay with us.
Me loves all of you. Love your curves and all your edges, all your perfect imperfections. Give your all to me.
Zim getting a little sappy tonight.
Yeah.
Beats by Zim bringing some piano legend. A lot of John Legend to go with. He goes with the solo piano John Legend. Watching too much Grammys. We're talking about love and Valentine's Day on Valentine's Day with our resident philosopher, Al Genie. He's a professor of business ethics at the school of at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. You can also find out all his work and his books at his website, algenie.net. All right, so as we were talking about, the 11 points, Al Genie's paradoxical propositions and presumptions about love as we wrap up this hour. You know, we got to the point where we talked about trying to get lust, love, and like in the same relationship. And it seems to me that what everyone is trying to do when you try when we talk about love is that it's somewhat transformative. If
right.
I fall in love, if I'm in love, my life is going to change.
It is, but we don't recognize it as productively transformative and destructively transformative. Love can take us away and destroy us, as well as it can be a growth mechanism by which you engender friendships and families, et cetera, et cetera. I think love can be very, very destructive. And we find out that some of these serial killers are simply looking for, I mean, I hate to say this, simply looking for a love. They're possessed. They think that they can find love.
Well, it's this concept with human beings. Yeah. We've talked about this with the seven deadly sins. This this concept that we are looking for something.
Right.
We're always on the search for something. And at the end of that rainbow, that could be destructive, whatever it is at the end.
And I want to suggest, even go to the next point, blending it together. Love is scary. Love is dangerous. Love is risky. And you can lose in it. It doesn't mean it's always happy. And that's something, and I think, and you have to be a player. I'm absolutely convinced that you could love many people in your life. And it can put by circumstance, you know, certainly divorce patterns in America suggest we could do that, but putting that aside, I think you could love many people in your life, but only have a specific love or a greater love for a single individual. But it is a lot of work and risky, and, and you can lose, but you have to be a player. If you're not a player, you can't be sitting on the bench.
I feel like there's, you know, in the back of my head during this whole hour, I've been talking about love and some of the redeeming qualities, and we're talking about some of the destructive qualities as well. But it just, to me, at a certain point, you think about people who may be without love.
Yeah.
Or people who might be listening to this who are somewhat, you know, a little bit depressed on a Valentine's Day that it's just nonstop love, and here we are talking about it for an hour. But I have to say that, you know, I'm looking for a conversation or at least a point about those who don't have love.
Yeah.
And where does that fit in? Where does it come into someone who may have lost a loved one and that was someone that they lived with and or, you know, a divorce or something of that nature? How do you pick yourself up? How do you use love in a transformative way
to get back? I think love can be Abraham Maslow said a great love and then a loss and a death. If you really had a great love and loss and there's a death or you're parted, that love should spur you on to seek love again because love is such a wonderful thing. And I think when you see older people marry again after they've been married for 40 years, and older people would be me, ladies and gentlemen, married for 40 years and the spouse dies and 3 years later, it isn't just companionship. That if you had a great love, you want that love again. It's hard not to love. That's why we love our children. That's why we have dogs and cats at such a number in the society. We need to love something. And I think we're stimulated to do that. Yeah.
For me, it's Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
You know, I love that show.
50 Shades of Blue or Gray or Purple, whatever it is right now.
All right. Eight, you've got true love is unconditional.
Yeah.
This seems pretty standard.
But for unconditional to be real, to flourish, it has to be regularly examined and reaffirmed. That is, I have unconditional love for you, but not if you have an affair, not if you, you know, become a Republican, right. Not if you become a Democrat. not if you know. My father-in-law once said, "Al, we don't believe in divorce in this family. We believe in death and dismemberment." You know, so that was always a great line. Keith would say that to me, and I said, "I got it. I got it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's ever unconditional. I think there's always conditions to love. If you change. If you become an alcoholic and you're my lover and you become an alcoholic and I can't abide by that. So I think this notion of love is unconditional and never ending is really
so it's unconditional in its it's truth. But it can change based on how people.
You have to re-examine it. Right. The conditions for that it really is true. I've known a number of people who have divorced simply because both couples have grown apart and have grown differently. And so they no longer feel that they are part of each other. I'm not trying to advocate divorce, but I think that was a genuine disconnect.
Yeah.
And that's very
love is unconditional, but.
But, right.
There are conditions, right?
What aren't there conditions to, right?
Exactly. Number nine, you've got love can rescue us, redeem us, save us, but.
Only if we want to be rescued and redeemed and saved. I don't think love is an excuse for anything. I don't think love is sufficient enough. For anything, is that the novel, but I love you, darling. Doesn't that mean anything to you? She says, no, not really. Sorry. I don't think it can redeem us if we don't want to redeem. And if you're not loving the right person, it's not.
So it's a tool.
It's a
tool. If I'm deciding, okay, I want to redeem myself or I want redemption or.
I want to stop drinking because I love my wife so much.
Right. But it's a tool. It's a tool. You have to actually want that regardless of love.
Right. Right. And I think it's a compound complex. And I think that the reality is the more you look at love, it's part of our human nature to find meaning and to focus in on causes and issues that direct our lives.
Let me ask you this. You know, I hear so much, especially with therapy and what we hear more and more in the 21st century is this self-love.
Yeah.
This concept of you know, you have to love yourself before you can love somebody else. You know, for you, as we talk here in this hour and we talk about philosophy and we talk about how, you know, really we're talking about two people as one in this hour, where does self-love
fall? Well, I think self-love by that, I take that to be the Socratic and unexamined life is not worth living. And the hardest thing you could do in life, said Freud, is to be honest about your faults and to be honest about what you can and cannot do. Think about this. I'm trying to ask a woman to marry me. He says, I'm loathsome. I don't make a lot of money. I don't like myself much. My family's not reputable. I live in a terrible place. Love me, save me. What's in that for them? I think to offer love, to be in love, you have to offer love, and that means you have to like yourself. Don't use the word love here. You have to be honest with yourself. And frankly, if you really love somebody, why would you give them a damaged product? Why would you make them tie them to something that's not worthy?
All right, number 10.
Yes,
love someone because you need them. Need them because you love them.
Eric Fromm's The Art of Loving, a book that nobody reads anymore.
That was the one that was on my shelf.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We solved another.
I've got that book.
That's right. Eric Fromm,
Everybody listening out here in WGN, I've got that book.
And I'm very touchy-feely and play the music, right? But I really think it's true. If you need them, you only love them because you need them. That's not love. You need them because you love them. That I can't live without you. I can live, but I don't want to live without you is a different distinction. And Eric Fromm, for all of his kind of pre-60s and pre-50s interpretation, I think he was right on that. That to be desperate and to be desirous is not the same thing as to be loving and to be objective and factual.
It's interesting, too. And I think about, you know, the writings of have gone all the way back to the beginning of this conversation, even that we talked about Plato and some of the stuff that was being talked about around the concepts of love in ancient times. You know, there's been a lot of introspection and investigation and exploration of love in just the last couple decades. I'm thinking about that book and other books where people are really, it's become a cottage industry.
And certainly one of the biggest shows on HBO right now or on cable is Masters and Johnson and so on and so forth and discovering the statistics in regard to sexuality. But the statistics really are an indication that people need connectivity. And that's what love is, connectivity, that Aristotle, again, to go back to the notion of friendship, one mind and two different bodies, that you have a connectivity, you could depend upon that there's something special about that. And what they're finding is the closest thing that really comes to that is all the research is doing in psychology is siblings, because you are one body. Mm-hmm. Because you are one genetic pool, and there's a greater connection to siblings than to any other connection you're going to make in life, even if people don't always recognize that.
Why don't people? I mean, I think about my sibling relationships. I think about, you know, other people, but it seems that one's a little bit more difficult, even in this Valentine's Day, to reach out and say, hey, brother, I love you.
Yeah, yeah. Because we don't think of it that way. But in reality, if you have a good relationship with a sibling, let's say two brothers or two sisters, that's really love in the highest form. And there is the other. That you're looking into the face of the other. That other is you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the other should always be you in the literal sense. I think that this notion that love is our destiny may be too much of the age of Aquarius. But the reality is, I think love means... And the notion of the age of Aquarius, love means never having to say you're sorry, is ridiculous. But love is a necessary condition for a full life. Even if it's unrequited love, I think you need to learn about love and to be in love at least once, even if it's with an ideal, if it's not a real human being, to be fulfilled.
Well, I'm going to take the next 2 minutes to text my brother.
Okay.
You know, I'm just going to do it right now. Josh, I love you.
Why not?
Happy Valentine's Day. Now, I know how that's going to be responded. What?
Now, there's a...
If we All right, let's wrap it up. We got two minutes, Al.
Four things
I got to text my brother.
Okay, four things to say. This is from marriage guru Kathy Lennon, Thomas Lennon's mother, who lives in Oak Park. Mm. She gave me four principles to always use in life after I had divorced one of her best friends. She said, these are the four things you say to your lover every day. You are so right. Secondly, I am so lucky. Third, I am so sorry. And fourth, gee, I guess I just didn't understand.
Come on, man. Oh, that's good stuff.
A formula for keeping
it
a happy
is,
relationship.
Professor Al Genie, he is a resident philosopher here on The Download. He also is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. You can find out all of his work, his books at algenie.net. This was fun. I had a lot of fun doing this tonight.
I did too.
You know, I'm not one to talk about love and feelings and things of that nature, maybe because I'm a guy and it's just something I'm not that interested in.
Guys talk
in
about sex, they don't talk about love. Yeah. Women talk about love. Men don't talk about love.
It's interesting to find out a little bit more about, you know, that I think the takeaways for me in this hour is that love is work. And love is labor, and it's not just something that you can just fall back on.
I think that's really true. I think people take it for granted. It's an emotion that feeds itself. It's not. It's an activity. It's a choice. It's a series of continuous choices. Otherwise, it dies.
Last question I have for you as we wrap up. It's just, you know, a lot of people say, man, I love chicken wings. I love baseball. I love, you know, love WGN. Is that love?
No, that's confusing like with love. I think love is a human emotion between – it is interhuman.
Well, what if they say –
like is desire.
What if they say, I really love Justin in The Download? I mean, I'm a person, so yeah, there's
– No, you could say that, but you don't mean it again, and you don't mean it in the four senses here. You mean it in a platonic sense.
That's true.
You mean it not in agape, or maybe in agape they think you're a god. I don't think so. But you mean it in perhaps in philia, so it's brotherly love, but you don't mean it in eros. So I think, again, those four different kinds of love, eros, the sexual, philia, the brotherly, platonic, this larger thing, you have to make these distinctions. And when you get them confused, you have a very unhappy life.
There it is, Al Genie giving us the unhappy. I will say I love – I love my brother. I love my family. And I love Rob Martyr as he gets ready for the news.
I love you too.
There it is. See? Life's looking up. Feels good. I feel like we got replenished.
Does this mean I could keep this box of chocolate?
We got to take the chocolate back. That wasn't for you.
I thought it was for me. I'm sorry.
No, it was for later guests. But. All right. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to check in at spring training with Kevin Powell, the Cubs, the defending World Series champs. Awesome to say that, right? We'll talk pitchers and catchers with Kevin Powell. Also, a couple students from Lane Tech High School talk about skipping the school play and going straight to off-loop theater. And, of course, 10 o'clock, we are going to bring you the worst, an anti-Valentine's Day, the worst tonight, 312-981-7200. We've got to balance it out, right?
Could anticipate a lot of the same, absolutely. We already have something planned for the first day that you might not want to miss. Did I say that right? That would be the first day of full squad.
The Grammy-winning Chicago Cubs. I mean, sorry, the world champion, World Series-winning Chicago Cubs. Anthony Rizzo at the Grammys, but he found himself down in Mesa, Arizona, taking some batting practice. The full squad doesn't report till Saturday, but they're all there. They all got there early. I guess they report tomorrow. Full squad first is on Saturday. Pitchers and catchers today. Kevin Powell is in Mesa for the big. I mean, this is unprecedented. We use that word all the time for the Trump White House. But for spring training, it's unprecedented. The defending world champion Chicago Cubs getting back underway. Kevin Powell, of course, WGN Radio Sports. And you can hear him every afternoon with Ro and Anna. Kevin, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Justin. You're right, though. I don't think that's an overstatement. It is unprecedented. The Cubs are trying to defend their first World Series in 108 years. So let's keep that 108 number alive somehow, some way. But that's what this Cubs team is trying to do. And, yeah, you mentioned Rizzo taking batting practice today. And that cut that you guys played coming out, that was Madden answering a question about sort of his gimmicks and antics that he pulls in spring training to sort of lighten things up. You may remember last year he had his 70s van, yeah, and they had the hippie attire. They had a magician. They had actual baby Cubs on the field, right, karaoke. So all those sorts of things. So he was asked about that, and he said he's got something in store Saturday, which is when it's the full squad workout. But, yeah, I mean, and it's not even just this week where everyone's been here. It's sort of just been kind of the past few weeks. I mean, some of these guys are trying to get early reps in. Rizzo's been in and out of here. Schwarber's definitely been here the past few weeks. And, man, he's just a blast to watch in batting practice. I could just watch him hit bombs to right field all day long. And I was a little worried because, remember, last year he put one through a windshield. You know, there's sort of a parking lot which is behind right field of one of their practice diamonds, and then that parking lot is in between the diamond and Sloan Park where they play the actual game. So a lot of the media park right there because it's closest, you know, in between. And he gets up there, and I'm like, man, what? How does this work? Like, if he breaks my windshield, do I have to pay for this? Or is it WGA?
Yeah, that's in the employee handbook. No, it's in the handbook that you have to pay out of pocket if it hits the rental car.
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
I'm parking on the opposite side of the stadium tomorrow.
You should park in tram. Find the. All right, so let's talk about this team. I mean, you know, Joe Madden was talking about, you know, the antics and things, but what that's all about really is about keeping this team loose. And he talked about the concept, and you talked about it a little bit this afternoon, about keeping this team uncomfortable. More than ever, that's appropriate after winning a World Series. You really, this team, you know, needs to find its motivation.
Yeah, and I just love listening to Joe Madden talk because sometimes I'm listening to him, I'm like, huh, I can apply that to my life a little bit as well. And I mean, everything he says has such a strong meaning, whatever you want to call it to. But yeah, he talked about being uncomfortable. I think that's a perfect way of putting it. I mean, these guys, if they become comfortable, if they become complacent with what they've done, then everything they sort of talked about right after the World Series, and you see this at every rally in sports, but people naturally are going to talk about repeats and dynasties. But I think with this team, they don't shy away from that because for most outsiders, you look at the roster and you look at the youth and how stacked they are, and on paper you're like, well, yeah, I mean, this absolutely could be a dynasty, no question about it. And I think the players believe it, but I think they have their heads screwed on right. It's sort of similar to spring training last year where even just today, I mean, these guys are showing up early. They're putting reps in. It's just that whole environment that the Cubs put out has winning written all over it. I mean, it really does.
Let me ask you.
I don't think any of these guys are going to be comfortable.
I mean, one of the things that we see more, you always hear about it maybe in basketball or maybe in hockey, you hear about when a team goes deep into the postseason and wins a world championship, the turnaround to get back on the playing field, in this case, you know, the diamond, is shorter than everybody else. I mean, when you think about pitchers and Tommy John and all the other things that go into it, a lot of the teams that were out in the first round or didn't make the playoffs, they've been resting for an extra 2 months over the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago Cubs pitching staff and some of the injured players that we've talked about, like a Schwarber. Does that play in at all? Is that being addressed about the idea that there has been such a short turnaround for this team to get back to baseball?
Yeah, that was asked about today, and I think the thing the Cubs have going for them, and Theo Epstein talked about it today, he said really with this turnaround and the rebuild and sort of his experience around Major League Baseball was that it's a player's game, it's a player's league, and as long as you have the right guys in place, and this is the way Theo put it, I'm paraphrasing a bit, but he essentially says we turn the team over to the players. So I think when they recognize the type of character player they have, which mm-hmm. there are a bunch of good guys on this team, Joe Maddon can come out and say something after Theo just said that, and Joe and Theo agree that they publicly said today if any of their players come to them and think they're pushing us too hard, they'll pull back in spring training. They have a very systematic approach to this and how many reps guys are getting. But I think it says a lot for your manager, your president of baseball operations to say publicly that they're willing to listen to the players. And if a player truly believes they're being pushed too hard or it's hampering their long-term success or health for that season, yeah. They trust them enough. You're not going to see that with most teams. I mean, that's against conventional yeah. coaching in all of sports. A guy tells you you're going too hard, what are they going to do? They're going to go tell you to run a lap. There's just a different vibe with this team where there's a trust and a bond between upper management, between manager Joe Maddon, and between the players. It's an interesting dynamic, really is.
Let's talk about, we're talking with Kevin Powell. He's in Mesa, Arizona. He's got his capri pants on, his golf polo. You know, he's doing the...
Got to stay comfy, got to stay loose, got to stay loose. Kind of stylish.
You got to stay breezy. You got to stay breezy. Got to be breezy out in the desert. All right, so let's talk, I mean, the additions and subtractions to this team. There's an interesting piece I was reading about Theo Epstein today and his philosophy on adding people. We saw Travis Wood sort of being a free agent up to the minute where the Kansas City Royals swept him up right before pitchers and catchers started. No big additions, nothing like we saw last year with Dexter Fowler. They're really taking a philosophy to look later into the season.
I think that makes sense. I mean, there's no real reason to tinker with a lot of things at this point. And Jed Hoyer, the general manager, said today flat out, he said, they don't really have much in the works right now, so don't expect anything to happen. You know, take that with a grain of salt. I mean, obviously, but I don't think they do, and I don't think they necessarily need to. I mean, to me, it's the question marks, if there are question marks, and most of the question marks are good problems to have. Like, hey, where are you going to play Kyle Schwarber every day?
Yeah.
That's a very good problem to have, and you have Joe Maddon who will make the right decision almost every time. I guess if there are some serious question marks, to me, it's the bullpen. We'll see what Rondon, who kind of faded towards the end there. Wade Davis seems like a pretty trustworthy closer. There's not a whole lot of concern there. And then at the back end of the rotation, you have Mike Montgomery fighting for that fifth spot. You have Brent Anderson, who they brought in. He's a lefty, and when he's healthy, he's really good. He's just had a lot of arm issues. So I think they've created a little bit of competition there, but not a whole lot of question marks. And I don't know what right now why you would do anything yeah. or move a prospect or anything like that, especially because, and I've stressed this all offseason when people ask me if I think they're going to repeat, I go, look, if you see how part of it is luck, sure, part of it starts now in spring training, how well they did in the health department, not a whole lot of DL since. Of course, there's a Schwarber freak injury, but other than that, maybe a short stint for Fowler. John Lackey had a right. precautionary DL stint. I mean, so there's no reason. They need to stay healthy. That's the biggest thing.
That's the biggest thing in sports.
If somebody does go down, then you can make that move at the deadline and save your pieces and, you know, for when it really matters.
Well, it's also basic. I mean, I guess the way that baseball works these days. I mean, the trading deadline has become for all teams that are figuratively out of it. You know, by July, they're looking to sell these pieces off. They know that. That's the philosophy going into the season. The White Sox have already talked about, well, maybe we'll keep Quintana around till the deadline. You know, I mean, there is a different way that baseball is sort of approaching the economics of the game. And it seems like the Cubs have already talked about, even on the first day of spring training, talking about, you know, sort of collecting their money and having it ready for a big acquisition at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and markets are created as the season goes on. Who's available, who's not available, who thought they were going to be contenders. You know, I think the thing as well is adding relievers is probably the, how would I put it? I shouldn't say easiest thing to add because it's not easy, but I think there's a lot of options out there because there are teams paying relievers a lot of money, closers, setup men, where if they become, you know, sellers near the deadline, that's a perfect opportunity for a team like the Cubs to capitalize and bring in an extra arm in the bullpen for the final stretch in the postseason. But yeah, I mean, back to your original point, right now, I think they're just fine with who they have on their roster. There's no reason to stretch for anybody else here.
Well, let me ask you about the offense. I mean, right now the plan in center field, I guess, is to play John Jay in some way, or is double A, is Elmora ready to go, to be the starting center fielder for this Cubs team?
Probably one of the biggest, question marks in terms of the lineup and in the field. The good thing with Jay is he's an insurance blanket. There's no question that's what he was brought in here for, is that if Elmora does struggle, they know they can put Jay in there, who's just a guy who is always kind of there. He finds a way to get on base. He's a really good defender. So there shouldn't be a ton of concern there, even if Elmora. But to me, I mean, man, even in the postseason and down the stretch last season, all the tools Elmora has, I think he could be a guy that hits, you know, 15 home runs, drives in 65 RBIs, and hits 275. I think the Cubs will be pretty happy with that as long as he's playing a strong defense. In terms of what they do at the leadoff spot, there's all sorts of options. If Elmora pans out, you can put him at the top spot. Kyle Schwarber, who's hit leadoff before, and I've always loved that philosophy of putting Schwarber there, especially when you look at pitching matchups, if you're facing a righty. I just love how, and you saw this in the postseason, where Maddon sets up his lineup where it just feels like it overwhelms pitchers from the get-go. I mean, you have to go Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo? Godspeed. Godspeed opposing pitchers. I mean, I love that. It has to suck the life out of a pitcher, right, before they even throw the first pitch. You have to face Kyle Schwarber, Bryant, and then if you don't want Schwarber there, you could put Ben Zobers back at the leadoff spot. I mean, there's so many options that Maddon can play around with. And then I guess one other question mark is, what will Jason Hayward's swing look like this year? We know he's sort of tinkered with it, and we've seen some stuff on social media where he's changing hands and yada, yada. So I'm interested to get a look at him Saturday when they get full squad work.
Oh, yeah. If he goes back to form, that's like adding a free agent. You know, Kevin, before we let you go, I mean, it's hard to say because it's the first day. Pitchers and catchers report today, but this is a defending World Series champ team. This isn't just the Cubs. Can you feel or do you notice a change in the crowd and people being around there, the national media reporting on this team from years past? I mean, last year they were kind of celebrities in the way that everyone was waiting for this team to win. Does it feel any different now that they've won?
It didn't feel – honestly, it doesn't. A little bit, of course, because they're champions. But I think last year, I mean – don't forget when we were here just a year ago last spring, everyone was expecting them to do what they did.
Yeah.
And you got to give them credit. So I think there was that hype, there was that pressure, and they embraced it. But yeah, the media room, because there's the Cubs training complex, and then a few hundred yards away is the park. So the training complex was a media room, and I was sitting Indian style like I was in third grade because it was absolutely packed in there. There was cameras, there was national media, ESPN, all those guys. So we were just swarmed in there, and last thing I wanted to do was upset any veteran writers and get in their way or anything like that. So there was a few of us sort of squatting on the ground in front of cameras, but whatever it takes to get the job done, right, Jason?
Yeah, did you see the at LAX, they paparazzi Rizzo coming out of LAX for the Grammys when he's going to fly to Arizona? He might have even got on TMZ, the idea that he was coming through the airport there. I thought that was awesome.
He's Mr. Superstar. Now, today it was kind of funny because he took batting practice, and, you know, when they start to walk off the diamond, the media starts to work their way in case they're willing to stop, and Rizzo goes, "This is not today, folks." And then he kind of turned around. He turned around and smiled and said, "Don't worry, I'll be here all spring." So Anthony Rizzo is loving it, having fun as usual.
I'm
sure we'll have a chance to talk to him tomorrow or at some point this
week. Well, Kevin Powell is in Mesa for the Cubs spring training. Started today. Full squad will be on Saturday. You can hear him every afternoon here on WGN, as well as all over the place doing reports with the beat on the weekends, but also, with Rowan Anna on his regular spot he does from 3 to 7 here on 720 WGN. Kevin, thanks for joining us, bud.
Thank you, Justin. I'll talk soon, man.
Coming up here, we're going to talk with Alex Milne and Seth Hultgren. These guys are behind the play Static, which is going to be at the Prop Theater, part of Rhino Fest. It's coming up here. What makes this special is both these gentlemen are seniors in high school. When I was a senior in high school, I was just trying to get into the school play, right? I think they were doing Our Town. And I remember specifically going to the call sheet after I did the, you know, the audition. And went down the list, you know, like who was in what role. And it got past the actors and it got to like marketing, Justin Kaufman. I'm like, no, come on, man. If I was in charge of like putting up posters around the school, I didn't even make it. But I you know, as someone who has, I've loved Rhino Fest, has been great for years. I've seen great shows at that festival. It's going on now. Static is the show. We'll talk with Alex and Seth coming up here after the 9:30 news. And tonight, Mike Makings and Kristen Lundberg will be our guests for The Worst. This is the segment we do every week where we complain about the worst things in society. For prizes, we've got prizes, 312-981-7200. It's sort of an, I mean, we could do an anti-love thing. We could do anything we want. I already said what's the worst. The worst is when your parking validation doesn't work. That's the worst. There have been at least two or three times in the past week where I have turned to whoever I was with. I'm like, you know what's the worst? This is the worst. This should be on the show. I was having one of those weeks, man. Mike's always good for it, and he said he's going to bring his best anti-love stuff tonight. So that's good. 312-981-7200. If you want to get in on the action, you can actually complain about love and, you know, win a pizza. A heart-shaped pizza. So that's coming up. That'd be fun. Tomorrow on the show, very excited about this, we're going to talk with Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis. She'll be my guest at the big table tomorrow night after, which I'm also excited about, the Wildcats taking on the Maryland Terrapins. Is that right? The Terrapins and the Terrapins?
That is correct. The Turtle.
Yeah. The Terrapins, the Turtles come to Evanston. It's going to be a big game. I'm excited about that game. That's one of those that, you know, it was so much to say. So many people said they locked at the that the Northwestern Wildcats locked the berth to the NCAA tournament by beating Wisconsin, arguably their biggest win in program history on Sunday.
David Haugh had a good piece today in the Tribune about what a difference a week makes for our two Big Ten schools here in the state. Illinois coming into Evanston, beating Northwestern.
Right.
Not a real good game for the Cats last week. Then the Cats go up to Wisconsin in Madison, beating the Badgers.
Unbelievable.
So
what a week. But I was reading this whole thing, you know, because we get a little homerism here in town. You know, when you read all this thing about it, it's a lock. But I was reading ESPN today from a national standpoint. They kind of do the bracketology.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Northwestern in the tournament, but they broke down who was in from the Big Ten and who's still on the bubble. And they had Northwestern on the bubble. They said they still have work to do because, you know, it's actually true. I mean, they have six games left. Let's say that they, for whatever reason, go 0-6 in that time. A 19-12 doesn't get it done. You know, this is where Coach Collins has to be diligent. I mean, if they go in tomorrow, if they can beat a ranked team in Maryland and get their 20th win, which ties the season, I think their all-time record.
That sounds about
then
right.
I think you're in. But if you lose that game and then you got Purdue on the schedule, you got the Illini who already lost to, you got a Rutgers game in there that you should win. But, you know, Pete, you and I, Rob, you and I, we all been talking about the idea that Northwestern has a bad rap almost in the way that they can't lose games that other teams like a Wisconsin or a Maryland can lose. You can't be 21-11 or, you know, whatever that 21-12 or 21-10 when you've never been there before. You know, like a Michigan State can be, they're going to be 19-14. It'll be like, nah, make them an 8. We love those guys. But Northwestern, I mean, if there's a lot of competition with a lot of teams that are around the same, you know, do they have the record? I mean, they beat a top 10 team, but that's the only one they beat. They didn't. They lost to Butler, to Notre Dame.
And this year, they over the weekend they put out the initial, like the, you know, I think it's the first time they've done it. The initial seedings, how they would come down if the tournament started today. They had people in the East, yeah. The top four seeds, no one in the Big Ten was in the top four seeds in any region. So it's a down year for the Big Ten, so you got to beat some good teams to prove.
This article talked about that the selection committee, as it stands right now, is down on the Big Ten. They see that the Big Ten doesn't have as much competition as it had in the past, so they're not looking to add those teams in the middle because they don't feel like they have a good resume for the tournament. So all that being said, it could go one way or another. That's what makes it so exciting about right now. They could win tomorrow and push themselves into a top three seed, get a bye for the Big Ten tournament. Now, I mean, that's unheard of. Or they could go on a losing streak and lose. I mean, that's the beauty of sport. Let's go get them, Cats. Come on. Go, Cats. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight when Patty Vasquez takes over. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Mike Makings, Kristen Lundberg will be in studio for our anti-Valentine's Day, the worst. 312-981-7200. We're already getting some stuff coming in. If you feel like this is the greatest segment ever, it really is. It's just call in, text, and you get to complain about society for prizes. It's what's the worst? So Mike and Kristen will be here to judge and play along coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. And like I said, tomorrow night, we've got a great show. Karen Lewis will be here tomorrow night. And on Thursday night, and I didn't mention this before, Pete, Emily Grassley and Robbie Telfer will be in studio. Emily Grassley is the chief curiosity correspondent at the Field Museum. And she is also the woman behind Brain Scoop, which is part of the Nerdfighter YouTube channels. She gets millions and millions of hits just to explain science. So think about that, huh? All right, in studio with me now, I'm very excited about this. Two gentlemen who are performing their play, or not performing their play, but they wrote and directed a play that is in the Rhino Theater Festival, which is a great festival here in Chicago. The show is called Static. It's on stage February 18th and 25th at the Prop Theater. And one of the reasons this is exciting is because these gentlemen aren't necessarily off-loop stalwarts. They are brand new to the game. They are seniors in high school at Lane Tech here in Chicago. Joining me in studio is Alex Milne and Seth Hultgren. Alex is the writer. Seth is the director of Static. Guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, you know, when I saw this, Roger Badish actually brought this to my attention. He said, you know, I got some guys who are doing some off-loop theater, you know. So I'm going to take a look, you know. And then when he explained the story some more, I was fascinated. I mean, I've been kind of joking around all show about the concept of, you know, the school play. I mean, everyone does the school play as much as possible. What is it about you guys, about the idea of getting out of that realm of the school play that you do at your high school, which I know you guys are involved in, and bringing it to the prop theater?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, it obviously, you know, really starts there, right? Like, this whole script started as a project for my drama class last year, you know, and, you know, I wrote a first draft of it, and I really thought that I had something going. So, you know, I continued on with that, and, you know, both of us, you know, Seth, I know, Seth and I, we both have a film background. We're going into film and, like, short films. And it was really just about wanting to really get an experience in, you know, showing a real side of this and like really getting an experience firsthand with performing and putting on something true, you know.
For you guys, let me ask you both. I mean, you know, the concept of it's one thing to have a project in a drama class, but it's another to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and submit this to a festival and I want to put it in front of eyes, you know, Chicago audiences. Talk about that process. Talk about how you guys ended up at the Rhino Fest.
Yeah. Well, that's something more with me just from the writer side, because I pulled Seth in later for direction because I, you know, we're buddies, we're collaborators, and I really just think that he's a real bang-up guy. But, the process of getting into Rhino Fest, it was really more of a process of, you know, I wrote this script and I sort of finished it up and, you know, I started feeling confident about it, started trying to get other voices, you know, other eyes on it, telling me what they thought of it, what they thought I should change. And really, it was just shuffling around between, you know, drama teachers, English teachers, friends of mine that are involved in the Chicago theater game. And, you know, I had this friend, Bailey Rose Boyle, who was a previous actor in this festival. And she said, you know, I think you got something here, and I want to put you in contact with Stefan Brunn, mm-hmm. who runs the Prop Theater, yep. who's really in close with the Rhino Festival. And so through that connection, I sort of submitted him a script. We sat down, and he said, I think you got something here.
What did you guys know of the Rhino Fest before you did it? I mean, I've seen shows. I mean, it's a very experimental theater festival. It's yeah. one that's been going on in Chicago for years. What did you guys know about it before you did this?
Both my parents have been Chicago actors and for a number of years. So they kind of know the history a little bit, and they are involved with the art house theater as well as just big theater in Chicago. So it was really cool to, you know, transition from a viewer to actually directing.
Well, let's talk about the play. Let's talk about sure. Static. Talk about, you know, what is Static? Talk a little bit about what you guys are what story you're trying to tell.
Well, okay. So Static is the story of a woman who has not been, you know, in the professional workforce and what would be, you know, the white collar workforce in a little bit. And it's about her reentering that field in the insurance end of a mental health facility. One that specializes in, you know, mentally ill children and teenagers. And it's about how, you know, adjusting back to that society, mm-hmm. adjusting back to being a white-collar worker. And it's about, you know, how your identity a lot of times is sort of defined by your profession.
What
and
you
how,
do, right.
Yeah,
right.
And, you know, how sometimes, like, you know, there's this feeling of, you know, if you're not doing something that, you know, is deemed, like, productive by society, that you can feel almost bad about yourself, like, you know, like you're wasting your potential. But then also that, you know, when you're really getting involved in that, and you're really, you know, doing it, and you're in the day-to-day grind, you can almost sort of lose, you know, your individuality and what makes you you, and your identity sort of becomes what you do yeah. and, you know, the people you work around.
Well, it sounds to me like a great play written by a 45-year-old woman, but you guys are, what, 17, 18 years
yeah.
old.
Yeah.
I mean, where does this idea come from? I mean, because you'll hear a lot of people talk about, you know, the concept of you write and direct what you know.
Right. Yeah.
Well.
Well, sorry, I feel like I'm taking all these.
No.
Seth, I'll get to you, Seth.
Oh, no yeah. worries, no worries.
No, so, you know, I'm not gonna lie. A lot of this comes down to, you know, my mother. My mother who, you know, was a brilliant. She worked in insurance at Prudential for quite a while. And when I came around, she you know, she gave that up to be a stay-at-home mother, and just recently, you know, got back inside of back into the field. And her experience has not been quite as negative as the play.
I'll
mention that.
I hope so.
But you know, it was a lot of that, and seeing how she sort of adjusted back to professional life, and also just a lot of my own. Feelings about, like, you know, work and, like, my experience working and how I sort of felt as I was going day to day, not only at school, but in, you know, in my summer job yeah. as a caddy, you know, sort of the environment that bred.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because storytelling is personal, and obviously telling a story about your family is something that I think it's interesting because you could tell this. You don't have to. We just had this conversation last night about whether or not you could tell the story if you haven't lived it. And you guys, you're talking about, you have lived. You lived it from almost like a third-person experience, and it's being there and understanding the story gives you enough to actually write the story.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that specificity really lends well to the fact of how real the play feels to me. You know, it's really rooted in reality, and all the conversation and all the pieces are pretty wonderfully written. And that's a tribute to Alex.
Thanks.
Obviously.
Alex Milne, Seth Hultgren in studio. The play is Static. It's at the Rhino Festival. It's on the. It's going to be at the Prop Theater, which is on Saturday the 18th and the 25th. All right, so Seth, let me bring you in this conversation.
Yeah,
as you guys both have, you know, said right at the top of this interview, you're both film guys. You do short films. Talk about what it takes to direct theater. When you're actually doing theater instead of film, what are the similarities, but what are also the challenges involved?
The biggest thing for me was we don't have a million takes, right? So when we nail down a performance, we want to replicate that over and over. And finding that balance between, you know, giving the actors some leeway in terms of not getting bored with the same lines every week, but also getting the same performance was an interesting balance to strike.
You know, for you guys, I guess I've been sort of saying, hey, these guys, these high school guys have put a play on in Off Loop Theater. You know, they've skipped a school play and gone right to the storefront. I'm doing that just as a promo, the idea of trying to, you know, sort of pull a kick. But I ask you guys just, you know, do you, is that what you're leading with? I mean, when people come to see Static, are they bombarded with the idea that you guys are younger guys and you've directed and written a play, you know, or, I mean, would they not have any concept of that?
I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the people, you know, coming to see the play are obviously, you know, folks we know, you know, friends and our family, you know, our support groups are showing up. But as far as the way that we're, you know, trying to market it, the way that we're trying to show it, we really want the play to stand on its own, as you know, as its own.
So you would have no idea. You would, I mean, the actors, no.
The cast didn't even know for a while.
Yeah,
that we were 18.
Yeah, a couple of guys thought we were in college. Yeah. So,
how did they react? How did the actors react when you're like, listen, I got to go. I got to get to math class. Like,
I'm sure it was a little upsetting, almost for them. Maybe a little disappointing. But I hope it was more of a revelation that this is possible rather than, oh, all of this makes sense because they're 18, if that makes sense.
Well, okay. So, I mean, have you guys had a – I mean, you talk about the drama project and the drama class, but you're both in film. You're going to Northwestern, Alex. You're going to Wesleyan, Seth. Does theater – I mean, where does theater play in your passion? I mean, is this something that you guys said, hey, I want to get into theater. I want to get into all the sort of performing arts. Or is this a little bit of a side project for you guys?
Well, as I said, my parents are rooted in theater, and so that's I grew up around that scene. But my first love has always been film. This was such an interesting project because it's different from what we usually collaborate on, which is film. So it's expanding our horizons and, you know, looking into different mediums. But it was still interesting and a lot of fun.
Yeah, and to add on to that, right, what you call it? From my perspective, as someone who does not have his background in theater, you know, my parents are not theater folks, and you know, I've never really been involved in it. Part of what really drew me to this was that it was sort of an intermediate, you know, an intermediary, because the prop theater is it's a really nice, it's a cozy theater, it's very intimate, mm-hmm. you know, it's a small space, and I tried to write the play very small, very intimate, almost, you know, screen like. And what I really liked about, you know, this theater and the way that we're presenting it is that we're in a small enough space that we can really let the actors have some breathing room where they don't really need to, you know, playing to the back row is not as taxing as it would be mm-hmm. at, you know, a huge place. So we can really let some moments simmer a little bit, and we can really let their, you know, their eyes and their face tell the story a little bit more. And that was one of the things that drew me to the prop. To do this thing, because, you know, I was sort of hesitant about doing a play because I hadn't, you know, done it before. But when I saw that space, I thought, you know, like, this is something I can do because this is intimate. This is for the play.
It's amazing because, you know, for all I'll have a lot of different artists in here, musicians, you know, people from the hip hop community who talk about their experiences at Chicago Public Schools. And they talk about, you know, the idea that maybe they went to Jones downtown, or maybe they went to Lane Tech or Whitney Young or any of the schools that are in the Chicago vicinity. And they all talk about this concept of community and this artistic community that bubbles out. And I think about you guys actually being students and not just, you know, settling for let's do something at the, you know, at the school, or let's do something that's safe. The idea of entering into the artistic community in Chicago to work with professionals, but also to you know, to be in the flyer that I'm holding in my hand, to collaborate with the artists that are working artists in Chicago. What does that mean to you guys as seniors in high school that you get the opportunity to do that in a big city like this?
As you said, it's an incredible opportunity. I'm so thrilled that Alex brought me along, and you know, it's different. It's outside of my comfort zone, but it's the only way to further my experience, my knowledge, is to break out of the barrier of you know, a high school setting or a small intimate community.
I also think it's really noteworthy to say, you know, like Lane Tech is such a huge school, and it really lets you, you know, find your niche, find your group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I look at, you know, all of my best friends, all the people I most respect at the school, you know, they're all these really fantastic artists, you know, people who are going and doing things, you know, with their life. You know, our friend Michael, who is actually running lights on the show, he's, you know, he's developing, you know, he's trying to develop an animated pilot right now, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I'm friends with, you know, so many amazing writers. And I think it's really just about finding that community within Chicago where, you know, we're mm-hmm. we're a poets community, we're a theater community, you know, we're a traditionally just very artistic city. And I think the culture around that and being able to, like, grow up and experience this transitional stage with other people.
Yeah.
Really, really helps you grow as an artist.
And there's, I mean, there's a lot of people who come to Chicago to do that, whether it be in college, that's where they start. They go to Columbia College, DePaul, Loyola. I mean, they go to Northwestern. But, I mean, you don't hear about it as much with high schools. And I'm just interested is when you think about the theater community that you guys are performing in or participating in with the show, do you feel like you are accepted? Do you feel like, you know, it was an easy transition for you to walk in and be a part of this living, breathing thing? I mean, Seth, your family's been involved in it, but talk about that, you know, like sort of being not only a part of that community, but coming from students.
Yeah, it's funny. The first day we walked in, we were definitely the odd man out. We didn't know our way around. We were fumbling around with, you know, just chairs and furniture. But as you spend time at the prop theater, it becomes homely and very comfortable. There's couches everywhere, but it's really funny. It's you break into it the same way you break into a new home or you know, a new school. It takes a little bit of time, yeah. But then it's comfortable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it you know, it just comes down to everyone there has felt the same way. You know, like everyone there has been the new guy once. And you know, there are people that are not going to let on to that nearly as much, maybe because they've been fixtures in the community for such a long time, or you know, maybe just because that's the kind of people they are. But, you know, when you really start talking to these people and you really start, you know, asking for advice and seeking these wiser opinions, it really becomes clear that they remember being us at one point, and they're really trying to make it as easy for us as possible to come in. And just, you know, on that note of, like, how it's so difficult for high school students, or not difficult, but unusual,
yeah,
to see high school students do this. I think a lot of that is just, you know, the culture that we're brought up in, and this idea that, you know, I think a lot of high school students have this sort of self-imposed limit where they think that, like, you know, like, oh, I'm in high school, so, you know, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay at, like, where I'm at. I'm going to stay at high school. Whereas I think, you know, I know so many incredibly talented people I consider far more talented than myself, who are, you know,
doing things,
not confident enough to go and try to be in Rhino Fest or get their things published. And I think it's a real shame. I think we should tell people, you know, make your art as good as you can and then try to get into the scene as early.
Well, I am impressed with the hustle, guys. I will tell you, man, there's a lot of artists I have on the show. And one thing that I feel that kind of connects the Chicago artists is the hustle, and you guys got it. Alex Milne is the writer. Seth Hultgren is the director of Static, a new play, which is at the Rhino Fest right now, the Rhinoceros Theater Festival. It's a 28th annual festival, the 18th and 25th at the Prop Theater, which is at 3502 North Elston Avenue. Alex, Seth, thanks for being my guest tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Of course. Really appreciate it.
That's so great. Two seniors in high school. I mean, I would dream of that stuff growing up in Wonder Lake. The idea that you could come to Chicago when you're 17 years old and put on a show, especially at a place like Rhino Fest. I love that festival. I remember seeing that festival. There's some people that I remember, you know, early on doing Rhino Fest in a way that, like, now you see them in LA and you see them, you know, doing things. That's been a very artistic and experimental theater festival for years. So kudos to them for taking on that project. And kudos to Alex and Seth for hustling to get it. Again, you know, annoyingly impressive youth. It's so true, right? Every time we're like, when I was four, I started playing guitar, started playing bass guitar. You're like, oh, man.
Yeah, those kids are going to be, you're going to watch those kids on award shows in a few years.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's great. That's great. I mean, if you live in Chicago and you go to, and you have the ability to go to high school in Chicago, why not take advantage of that opportunity? You already have your foot in the door in the way that you can, you know, get yourself and use connections and get yourself in front of an audience in one of the biggest artistic cities in the world. I mean, that's the draw for half of the colleges here. Come to Columbia College. You'll be in the biggest, you know, the third largest market in the United States. So much art, so much film, so much music.
Or you could take Latin for 3 years. It gets you places.
Is that autobiographical story? You were a Latin guy? No? That'd be awesome if in our relationship you just pulled that out. I speak fluent, study fluent Latin. Oh, really, Pete? Yeah, I never talk about it. That would be great. All right, coming up, we're going to play the worst.
It's going down, y'all. The worst come, my people should come first. The worst come, the worst. The worst come, the worst. My people should come first.
All right, thank you, Mr. Martyr. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's time for the worst. This, of course, our Tuesday night segment where we make fun of and complain about the worst things in society for prizes. And we got good prizes tonight. We've got a pair of passes to see the Lego Batman movie. What? And also Lou Malnati's gift certificate. I've already seen the Lego Batman movie. No big deal. I have. There was a couple times in the movie. I don't want to disparage the movie because it's fine. I don't care. There were a couple times where I'm like, no one's going to know if I shut my eyes. Just take a quick nap. It's Will Arnett. There's a lot of great comedians in it, but you're also like, you know what's going to happen. It's a Lego movie. You know what's going to happen.
I can probably say this now. I think the statute of limitations is up, but I was doing Big Brothers for a while. A few years ago. And
you mean the statue can't talk about it?
Well, this is probably frowned upon among Big Brothers.
Oh, you're not supposed to Big Brother and tell?
Well, you know, we went to go see Frozen. Oh, okay. You know, that was a huge movie at one point, but I was working mornings, you know, I was getting up at 1 a.m, you know, so I'm taking my guy to see Frozen, and, you know, as soon as the lights go down, you know... I'm out like a light, and I don't think you're supposed to be, you're supposed to be on duty, I think, but man, I slept through that whole 2-hour movie.
If he said anything, you just go, this is what Big Brothers do. They fall asleep in movies. That's what they do.
And it seemed like, you know, then it turned out to be, you know, this huge smash that everybody talks about. I'm like, yeah, I remember that. I remember that day. I saw that. I think I kept my eyes open for about 20 seconds.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number tonight. We're playing the worst. In studio with us, comedian Mike Makings. What's up, Mike?
How we doing? How we doing?
Good to see you, buddy.
Good
it's
to
been
see
a while.
You, man. Yeah. Yeah. Nice to be back.
Mike Makings, the original player for the worst. You're one of the first guys we ever had on the show.
I was, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And
I think the first time you were ever on WGN, we did a little
That's
something
right.
together.
If you remember the April Fool's baseball Cubs thing, Mike was
involved. That was a nice broadcast.
Really was. The annals of broadcast.
WGN history.
312-981-7200. We're playing, and there's a lot of anti-Valentine's Day in the air, you know, and
there
this
is.
Will be the time to do it. I'm already getting some texts in about some anti-Valentine's Day, anti-love the worst, and we'll get to that tonight.
Sure.
Kristen Lundberg's going to join us as well. She's looking for parking. So that's okay.
And that
Classic
is the
Valentine's.
Worst.
That's the worst.
Looking for parking in this city.
All right. Why don't we start tonight like we start every night with Mr. Pete Zimmerman. What do you got, Pete?
This is kind of Valentine's Day related in that, you know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Balloons.
Just in general?
Yeah. They're terrible. They're wasteful.
They're wasteful.
They're bad for the environment. Nobody really wants them.
Feel bad for the... the minute you start playing with a balloon, you're like, there's something just... There's wrong. This is made wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Well, they resemble something else. I mean,
yeah.
I like weather balloons, though. I'm a weather balloon guy.
You'll take a weather balloon. But
you've seen the when they hook up like camera to the weather balloon?
Yeah.
Fantastic stuff.
I will say are we still in a helium shortage in this country? Has that gone away? It was a couple years back. My son had a fourth birthday or something, and I had to go. My job was to go to Party City,
yeah.
You know, and get like 12 balloons. And they had a big sign on the wall that was like due to the helium shortage. Like I was supposed to know, you know, you can only get this many balloons. I was like, wow, we're running out of helium, like the periodic element. We're running out of it in this country.
Oh my God!
Or at least commercialized.
That is shocking.
Yeah. I don't know. Someone could let me know if that's still a thing. If we're still rationing helium, I don't know if that is.
I've got so many questions now.
There could have been something happened, with the Trump administration that helium is back. Yeah. You know, it could be.
We're fracking for helium.
Yeah, right. All right, Mike. What do you got? First off, Mike Makings, a stand-up comedian. You could check him out at the Comedy Bar. He's performing all over town, but he's got his show Tuesdays at 8:00, the Tomato Throw Show. It's at the Comedy Bar here in River North, 500 North LaSalle, the old Michael Jordan's.
Yes, sir.
Tomato Throw Show, what is that?
It's a very fun show where we have 7 comics performing about 7 to 8 minutes of material each. And then everyone in the audience is given a tomato, and are encouraged to throw that tomato at any comedian that they don't like or find unfunny.
Is it a real tomato?
It's unfortunately not a real tomato. We wanted real tomatoes due to legal issues. We couldn't do that. So they're like little stress balls.
Dry cleaning issues?
Yeah, I mean, so if, you know, a guy in the back throws a tomato and it doesn't hit the stage but hits a girl sitting up front, we got a problem.
I'm glad you brought the lawyers in on this.
We had a big legal meeting to find out just how easily you could throw tomatoes at people, and apparently it's not that easy.
Not that easy.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you got for the worst?
All right, well, this is more like me being the worst than a society one, but I think it still counts. Last year on Valentine's Day, a coworker of mine got a huge bouquet of flowers. Mm-hmm. I mean, roses, daisies, sunflowers.
Big time.
But she had just broken up with this guy a couple weeks ago.
Oh, no.
And she's like, I don't want these flowers.
So he was like, take me
he
back.
He was trying to get her back.
So he went all out.
He bought this $100 worth of flowers. Massive bouquet.
Yeah.
I had just kind of started seeing this girl, but we were going out for Valentine's Day, and I hadn't gotten her anything. So I told my coworker, I'll give you $20 for that bouquet. And she said $30. I said, deal. And I walked into this girl's house that I was seeing with this massive, and she was... She was kind of surprised. It was a little too early, probably, for that many flowers. But I felt good about it.
That's a good one.
I gave her.
So you are the worst.
I am the worst.
Or the best. How did that relationship turn out? Are you still with her?
Absolutely not. No. But I did see pictures of her and the guy she's dating now on Facebook today. Okay, which is the worst when you.
Actually, there is one in here that says, 815's got the same concept. When your girlfriend breaks up with you, and 10 months later she posts on Facebook, happy one-year anniversary to her. Like, oh, man. The timing doesn't work out in that one.
No, not so much.
Don't you got to hide that once you're broken up? Hide that person.
Well, yeah, when you hit the old unfollow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why are you still stalking on that?
Yeah, you should not follow your exes.
Come on, 815.
It's just
going to
hurt you. It hurts.
What's the worst? Following your exes.
Yeah.
That's the worst. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get to these texts and get to your calls. 312-981-7200, our anti-Valentine's Day, the worst here on The Download. Stay with us. Playing the worst here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, comedian Mike Makings, and of course Pete Zimmerman. We're playing the worst for prizes: a pair of tickets to see Lego Batman movie at ArcLight in Chicago or Glenview, and a Lou Malnati's gift certificate tonight. Let's get to some of these texts. 773 says, you know, it's the worst. Politicians or pundits, Republicans or Democrats, using the phrase "the American people" to prove their point. That's a good one. That is when anyone says, "But the American people," you're out.
Like you're in touch.
Yeah.
Exactly. Come on.
Who says the American people?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if you're a politician, you know that the nation's divided. When you say the American people, that's pretty I don't know. There's something about it. You're like, you think you know everybody.
You don't know me.
708 stays with the politics. The worst is when I had a dream about a naked President Trump making a speech wearing just a red tie. I woke up sweaty and embarrassed.
Well, it's
just a dream.
Good thing that power tie goes below the belt line on Donald Trump, huh?
It's a long tie dream.
That's a long tie dream.
And 773 says the worst is eating crow due to the greatness of Dougie McBuckets. All right. I made one joke that the guy's got to go. He has a good game. Everyone's like, well.
McDermott?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Right?
Eating crow.
Oh, you
on
got
one
me.
Game, he made a couple threes and he's a stud? No.
It was, you know, the Bulls like drafted up. They moved up to get
Dougie. To get McDermott, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they needed a shooter after losing Korver.
Also, Kyle Korver, what's with his teeth? The guy's got like the craziest teeth, like the whitest teeth. You ever see his teeth? Like,
yeah.
He's got a mouth guard that's white, so it throws you off a little bit. But then when he takes it out, you're also like, man, those are perfect. Like, those are beyond basketball teeth. Those are just perfect teeth.
The dental program in the NBA is stellar.
It really is.
Yeah.
He capped that stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's go to Matt. Matt's on the line. Matt, what's the worst, Matt?
Hello, gentlemen. The worst is when you leave your house keys in your car, go upstairs, realize you don't have your house keys, drop your car keys in front of your door, don't notice, go downstairs, realize you don't have your car keys, then you have to go back upstairs to get your car keys, to go downstairs to get your house keys to get into your apartment.
Logistics, the worst.
Oh my gosh.
Matt, that's a lot, man.
Sounds like Matt might have a drinking problem.
Yeah, Matt. It feels like that is very very unique. How often does that happen to you?
In the past 3 months, it has happened to me 4 times.
Oh, my God. That's awesome. What about, I'm confused. You don't have it all in the same ring?
No, I don't want the keys to pull out of the ignition or get bent, so I keep the keys on.
Oh, I see.
Go ahead and get yourself a key ring there, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the concept of them, right? I mean, you put them all in one ring, so then you don't have to do exactly what you're talking about. But, all right. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah,
thanks,
but no, if I do that and I lock the keys in the car, then I'm totally screwed.
Yeah. I never lock the keys in the car because, if I don't take the keys out, my car makes a noise. You know what I mean? I think all cars do that now. Like, if I open my door and the key is in the ignition, it goes, bing, 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 bing.
I also got the button that locks the car, so I'm not going to lock the car unless I'm out of it with the button.
Yeah.
I don't manually press lock anymore.
Matt, I think the moral of the story is you got to get rid of that 1987 Dodge Colt.
It's also the worst is people that do their car like 50 yards away from their car, you know, open up their car. I hate that. Like you hear that thing and like, where is this guy?
I will say
30 yards away.
I will say this. This is one that I did the other day and I felt ashamed that I was parking the car in the Rush Street area. Right. And Rush Street's one of those areas like the Viagra Triangle area where it is like the best restaurants and the hoitiest and toitiest and also the skankiest place in the world. Like all in the same the same block. You know, you're like, you feel like you're going to get jumped, but you're also like, oh, there's one of the Chicago Bears. It's just like, you know, it's like that kind of thing. And I was parking the car and I was right on that edge, right? And I did the thing. I got out, you know, we're walking and I wasn't even paying attention, right? And I was like, I was about halfway past the car, like walking to the restaurant. I'm like, oh, did I lock it? Did I lock it? You know, so I did the bup, bup, and it went beep, beep. You know, it did the thing right in front of like, two people of color that were walking past the car. Like, I had a Larry David moment. I'm like, it wasn't for you. I didn't know. Like, it's classic. Like, I was just like, couldn't. I was part of the problem, not the solution.
Sure.
So,
Were you far enough away? Just pretend like it wasn't you at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just didn't turn around. Don't look back.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, do not look back. 312-981-7200. 312's got a good one. The worst is when parents give their kids names that no one can spell, like Haley, H-E-Y-L-E-I-G-H. Just spell it Haley or Haley. Or you know what? Just name her Sue. That sounds like a stand-up routine.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
I'm going to give them a pizza, and then they're going to find out George Carlin did that bit. That's usually, you can never
it's on
tell.
The new Bill
There's
Burr
no fact
special.
Checker for the, yeah, exactly. There's no fact checker for the worst, but it is a good bit.
We had the other guy last week who said it's the worst when your parents name you Herman. So
I mean, yeah, that one was.
I mean, that you can spell that fine, but you know, people just don't like it.
That was authentic. That one felt authentic. The Haley one feels a little bit more like I ripped this off from a Aziz Ansari bit, you know, or something like that.
Someone's scouring the Netflix specials.
Yeah.
Lifting bits for the worst.
773 says, at a job interview and the interviewer keeps making jokes about your name. My name is Lamont, and the guy asked if I was a big dummy in his best Red Fox voice. Again, I don't know if that's real. That doesn't seem real.
No.
Maybe it's Lamont. Maybe it's a Lamont.
A lot of issues with names.
Yeah, it's a name. I thought it was going to be an anti-love.
Yeah, and everyone just hates their names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
949, the worst is when you were so excited to play the worst last week, but ended up too heartbroken because your boyfriend broke up with you and dropped you off by the tenth city developing on Lower Wacker. But at least he didn't do it on Valentine's Day. Again, I feel like this is just like, now we're just making stuff up.
Well, yeah, that's a great place to get dropped off. What?
Yeah. I mean, what was the idea? Was the idea that he's like, hey, you know what? I don't want you in my life. Go live on Lower Wacker. He kicked you out? That's a weird place to drop off. There's not even a bus stop. I mean, I guess there's a rush hour bus stop down there. But
can you at least take me up the ramp on Randolph?
Have we not had enough of a relationship where you can put me on Upper Wacker? I don't even know you anymore.
Don't stick me on Lower Wacker.
How dare you?
The best breakup is all the way on Lower Wacker at the impound lot.
Yeah, the tow lot.
Yeah.
there's actual breakups that happen there.
Yeah.
Hey, babe, can I borrow your credit card?
Yeah, I've been there. That's not a good place to be.
No, it's not.
It's so funny. Whenever I get in an Uber and I say, can you take Lower Wacker? They're like, I don't know much about it down there. I'm like, it's one straight shot. And then I forget, unless it's not. You know, if you take a wrong left down there, I've been there. I've known that. I've sometimes tried to explore. Like, I'm like, what's this left turn doing? Next thing you know, I'm like, I think I'm in Indiana.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
I did that after the Batmans came out that were shot down there. I'm like, I'm going to go take a cruise down there, see where this movie was shot at. And then,
the next thing you know, you got a boot on your car.
I got a boot on my car. I'm in Berwyn.
312-981-7200. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back. We'll continue to play the worst. We're getting some good stuff tonight. We got prizes, too. If you want to go see Lego Batman or get a free pizza, just complain about your day. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here, 720 WGN. We're playing the worst. Joining us now, stand-up comedian Kristen Lundberg. Good to see you, Kristen.
Yo, thank you.
We made it. You made it. That's a difficult we were actually just talking about Lower Wacker Tribe.
Struggle and strife. It's my life.
Kristen is a stand-up. She can be seen. She's actually going to be featuring for Patton Oswalt coming up at the Ohio Theater in February 23rd, I think it was.
24th.
Also, you're auditioning for Celebrity Judge on America's Got Talent.
Oh, yeah.
You could be the new Nick Cannon. I heard he's leaving the show.
Yeah, he's leaving, and I'm not allowed to really talk about it, actually. Sorry.
That's all right.
NDA.
That's
all right.
Congratulations on that. Mike Makings as well is here. He hosts the Tomato Throw Show at the Comedy Bar here, 500 North LaSalle, old Michael Jordan.
Yes.
Which I won.
Kristen Lundberg is a winner of the Tomato Throw Show.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. Yeah. All right, 312-981-7200. We got some good stuff coming in, text and call, but why don't we start off with Mike. Mike, what do you got for the worst?
The worst, adults who still drink milk.
You know, I just started drinking milk.
Really? I mean, and I got no problem with cheese or even a milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
But plain milk to me is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, that's kind of it's more of a nurturing thing. It's like that's what you get from your mother.
Yeah.
When you're a kid.
Yeah. It's very kid. Yeah.
It's a kid thing.
Yeah.
I'll
put milk in coffee and things like
sure.
that. I'll add milk
no,
to
yeah,
things,
yeah.
A full milk, glass milk, of milk?
No.
No.
I saw a guy one time, he was eating two hot dogs and a glass of milk, and I was absolutely disgusted.
Like the milk is going to help what's happening, or like...
A couple of hot dogs and a glass at 2%. Can there be a worse dinner? No. The worst.
At least make it whole,
the worst.
Man.
Yeah, at least make it whole milk.
Spend some money.
Ugh.
All right, Kristen, you ready to play? What do you got for the worst?
Well, right now I'm thinking, so I work at a bar downtown currently, and when people ask me for large ice cubes, specifically, and I'm like, dude, do you see a caveman back here chiseling a large ice cube for you?
The mixologists have ruined it for you, because there are places that have like, oh, these are the coolest ice cubes.
Yeah.
I wish I had one of those ice cubes. I mean,
yes.
Seriously, yeah.
And it's like, no, it's a treat when you stumble upon it. You cannot request that.
You can't request it. I could give
you a bunch of ice cubes stuck together.
Yeah,
if
that
you
works.
Want, I can give you the whole dang tray.
I can give you the leftover bottom part of the bag you got from Jewel at 4th of July. That's what's in my freezer right now.
Yeah.
All stuck together.
Stuck
like
to the plastic.
Yeah. A sheet of windshield ice, maybe.
Yeah. All right. Let's keep going here. Let's do some of the text. Let's get them in here. All right. 773, rooting for older acts against my kids' favorites on the Grammys. That's kind of a funny. I guess that's the worst. It's a funny bit.
It's very, yeah.
All right, here's going. 630, what's the worst when after... Oh, this I believe, is the same person who is... Okay. So, let me get back to it.
Do we got
949. We have a lot of people coming in, but 949's mad.
Okay.
We heard her feelings.
Because she had the worst, saying that she got broken up last week. And dropped off on Lower Wacker Drive. And Mike and I said, that sounds fake.
Like, you don't get dropped off. I can describe three instances where I've been dropped off that are worse than that.
So, okay, there you go. She says, what the heck? She says, what the heck, Justin? The worst is when everyone claims that your heartbreak isn't real and Lower Wacker can't be a reasonable place to be left out.
I don't think anyone said that her heartbreak's not real.
Right.
I mean, I think maybe she was upset and got out on her own volition on Lower Wacker and then realized maybe I shouldn't have gotten out here.
Yeah, right. Maybe there's maybe they sort of stopped the car.
Stop the car. I'm getting out.
Right. That could work. That's happened.
That's happened.
Yeah.
That would be real.
Yeah, all right. No one gets out on Lower Wacker if they can help it, man.
Yeah, right.
Not I mean, there's not even to... mythical trolls. Like, no.
Like, I don't have a riddle for this situation down here. All right, 214 says the worst is gray back hair.
God.
My wife hates it.
Is it the worst for him or is it the worst for his wife?
I guess it's probably the worst because his wife doesn't like it. And he's like,
doesn't he?
You know, he's just like,
it's
tough
to get just for men back there too.
Yeah.
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 It's tough. That's a good anti-Valentine's Day one.
That's a good one.
They should make just for men for leg hair and body hair.
Back hair.
That's good.
You know what's the worst? 630 says, when after dating for 5 years, getting married for 1 year, and after you help him pay off his debt, you know what's coming here. He falls out of love with you and wants a divorce, moves out, and leaves you with $100 in the bank. $100 in the bank.
$100.
That's the worst.
That's a very good
anti-Valentine's Day.
Yeah, you brought the house down with that
one. Jeez, I'm sad.
There's a lot that you can mine for comedy off of.
Did you find this guy off of Craigslist?
Yeah, sounds like a scam.
Yes. Did you ever actually meet this person in person?
Got heavy
in
here.
It did. That happens. That happens on the worst because people take the worst literally.
Yeah.
And they will get into spots where they're like, I'm about to die. And you're like, oh, that's terrible. You win a pizza? You get that sometimes. 773 says the worst is when a highway patrol cop follows you for 2 miles before pulling you over just for swerving a little. And then 2 minutes later, you're asked if you had anything to drink.
Okay.
I'm not sure why that has.
Why would you put up with a cop following you for 2 miles? I would change the lane.
Yeah. I turn onto a side street when a cop's behind me.
Yeah. Immediately.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if you're on a highway, you can't really get off. So, you know, I like to assert my dominance over cops.
How's that working for you?
I mean, not great. But, you know, I'm like, oh, you want to follow me? I'm going to go in the other lane and, go slower or something. I don't like them behind
me. You want to control the situation.
Yeah, I want to control
it. Just put on the flashers and pull over to the shoulder.
I once got pulled over from the front.
What?
Yeah. Is that even possible? I didn't get a ticket. Because I don't think that's even a thing. But the police officer was on the highway, was in Indiana.
Okay.
And he, through his, I guess it's just from his eyeball in it, thought I was going too fast because he had sped up to get away from me. And then I had caught up to him. And then he was like, and then so he did a little thing where he turned his cherries on and kind of went backwards.
You.
And
unbelievable.
Cherries and berries.
I one time... drove away from cops on bikes that tried to pull me over.
Really?
That's illegal.
Yeah, I know it was.
That's a strong move.
It was a strong move. I was delivering pizzas at the time, and I rolled through a stop sign, and they were like, hey, pull over. I was like, zoof, I'm out of here. I evaded police. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It got dangerous up in here.
I could be a felon.
Well, they could have got your license plate number, but I guess
they
didn't want to go that far.
They're probably not. They're bike cops.
Yeah, but there's no cops.
I know.
Yeah, what are they going to... They have to have, either a wicked memory.
Yeah.
Or, a pen and paper.
Pen and paper.
Just to jot it down real quick.
That probably was the most action they saw in weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They finally got one.
They're still talking about that.
Remember when that Toyota Tercel took off?
Or the guy named Red Isuzu Rodeo just bailed on us?
Yeah. You're a wanted man.
I am. Very dangerous.
630 says the worst is when family disagreements can only be settled by a death in the family.
Oh.
Whoa.
Wow.
That's true. That
wow,
is
wow, I would want to be in that family because I've had 6 deaths this past year and we still hate each other. I'm just waiting for the rest of them.
It is true, though. I mean, it's the wake and the funeral that brings you back together. Like, what were we fighting about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
$45?
Yeah.
Yeah, let it go.
Let it go, I guess. The worst, 815 says, getting called into work to cover a quote-unquote rush, taking one delivery and then having to go home. The $4 I made didn't even cover gas.
I can side with that for sure. Yeah. I delivered pizzas for a long time.
Both of you guys got something in common here. Yeah. Did you evade any bike cops?
No, I evaded a ticket one time. I fought a parking ticket. But I wasn't actually delivering at the time, but I went and took pictures with the delivery sign on and stuff, and I was like, I was delivering.
Nice. We got a couple of outlaws in the studio tonight.
We're thieves.
We're thieves.
We're comics. We're terrible people.
Oh, we're just trying to get
Happy
by.
Happy Valentine's Day. 773 says, the worst is my girlfriend who sleeps with her socks on. Okay. That's the worst? Okay. Then you got a good...
If that's the worst thing about your girlfriend, you've got it made.
You got it made. Yeah. 630 says the worst is when you're potty training.
Training someone else, or you personally are potty training?
That's the question.
I'm like, well, you know how to use a phone, so better get on that potty training
you
tip.
You sent a text.
Better get on that pee-pee tip.
All right, let's try. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Donna. Donna, what's the worst, Donna?
The worst is when you plan a trip to Disney. Uh-huh. Get there and you're so excited. The first ride you want to go on to is a log ride, and the extended family and brothers kids and cousins.
Yeah.
Figured it's a great time. Well, the first two people on the log ride are my brother-in-law and myself, and we happen to be the plus-size people in the family.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we're too heavy for the log to launch.
Oh, what? No!
No!
Oh, no.
That's because those Disney rides were made in the 60s, though. I mean, there's something about it that I know that from going there, like getting in that log or doing Splash Mountain or whatever it is. I'm always like, oh, this is tight, man.
This also Disneyland, California, and Florida, a lot of skinny people there. That's why they don't have a Midwest Disney, because no one can get on the rides here.
I feel like a log ride, though. Like, that just, I mean, come on. It's called the log ride.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you can't get on the log.
we were on it, and it clunked and went down, and the log next to us launched away, and they filled up the water again, and meanwhile, the line, you know how they swoop in the lines there, they're all starting to elbow and snicker and point, they fill us up with water and launch us again, and the car next to us takes off, and we clunk, clunk again.
Oh, no.
So the kid has to bring three people over to put their foot on the log and give us a shove down the thing.
Did it work?
It finally worked,
After
three launches.
Silver lining, you probably went down that thing faster than anyone else, though, with all that weight.
Yeah.
Interestingly, my daughter was in the back. She was about 13 years old. She weighs about 95 pounds, and she was airborne on the way down.
Wow.
But it wasn't funny.
No,
not at the time. Not at the time. Time.
Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Donna.
The worst is the humiliation when people are pointing at you on the log.
Oh, that's terrible.
You're too fat.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Donna. That's a real one, man.
That's a real one.
Yeah, that sucks. It sucks, too, because I know I'm not a plus-size person, but at the same time, as I got older, and I just did Disneyland like 2-3 years ago with my son, there were a lot of those rides where I'm like, oh, man, like getting in there, I was just like, geez. So I can understand, like, people, they're not built for a current American.
I'm a bigger fellow, and I got to tell you, I despise roller coasters.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. And I think being a bigger guy, you know, because you experience G-forces, so when you've got extra weight, it hurts. It hurts, Justin.
It hurts us, too. G-forces hurt us, too.
They do? Little people like you?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Let's take a break, and then I'll wrap up all the texts and the people that are calling in, and then we will give away prizes tonight. Mike Makings, Kristen Lundberg in studio. We're playing the worst here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Words come to words, my people come first. Words come the words. Words come the words, my people come first. Words come the words.
All right, we're playing the worst here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. We got a lot of texts to get through tonight, so let's get right to it. 773, the worst is getting blinded by the intense lighting in every store.
Okay.
Mm. I guess I don't really get blinded from the Target. Is that what they mean by Target?
I feel like that's something a vampire would say.
Comic Kristen Lundberg, Mike Makings in studio tonight. I forgot that part. Let's see. 773, the worst is feeling like you just ran a marathon after only 2 hours of shopping. 630, I'm a bigger guy too. I love roller coasters, except when my glasses get crushed by my butt. Okay, I don't know.
Why are you...
I think they're making a joke there. I'm some sort of joke. The worst is getting ignored by a completely unhelpful salesperson. Okay.
Wow.
The worst is battling that one girl for the last item of on sale in your size.
I went shopping for a long time today, and it was very stressful. But I'm not battling anybody in there.
Yeah,
you know. Except myself.
Except yourself.
I'm just like, get out of here. What? Why am I still here?
Ripping the garment with both hands. 630, I am potty trained, but my daughter is dragging it out.
Okay.
Finally getting into preschool has helped. Yes, potty training is this bad. It's the worst.
Sure.
It was way more fun making fun of him.
Yeah, right. 312, the worst is having a big head. Nothing fits. Okay.
Yeah. I have big hair, so it's kind of adds to the head.
Yeah. It's sort of like all of the, it's all one thing. It's connected.
Yeah.
630 says the worst is when a wife cheats while going through IVF, then wants the husband to pay for it after the breakup.
What's IVF?
Yeah. In vitro, like the artificial insemination.
Oh, so she's trying to get pregnant?
She's trying to get pregnant, but the wife, that's a sound.
Cheated
fake.
While doing IVF.
Fake. Right? I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, that...
It just sounds like something that's just too dramatic.
It might not be fake, but that's, like... Yeah, that's too much drama for me.
Yeah, that's not whimsical, the worst.
No.
Take it to Jerry Springer, man.
This is AM radio.
Come on. This is more our speed. The worst is T-shirts that look totally normal and plain until you spot the tiny embroidery that says something completely random.
I mean, that is a bit... That's very, very...
Specific.
Specificity.
Yeah.
Yeah. 708, the worst is head tattooing that's supposed to look like hair.
I've
never seen that either, but that's awesome.
It kind of sounds like the best. Yeah.
The problem is you'd have to tattoo a part and then you, like a part in the hair, and then you'd never be able
to change your hair.
Yeah.
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 The worst is trying to figure out what people's tattoos mean. They never make sense and they're never in English. I don't know about that.
Well, all right.
We're talking about that one
Japanese. People with tattoos do hate when you ask about them, though.
Sometimes. Not all the time.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like that's kind of to be expected when you get a tattoo that's in, like, English. And
It's a party starter.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It means internal peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay.
And you don't like it if it's not in English. All right, we're in Trump's
America. It means balance. Yeah. All right, thanks. Thanks for that. Thanks all for right. putting balance on
balance.
on your bicep.
Right. Yeah.
773 says juggling your groceries in your arms as you leave the store because you're too cheap to pay 7 cents for a bag. So and you left your reusable bag in the car. So, man, that's true.
That's true.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
The worst. Let's see here. The worst is when people are on motorbikes split the lanes and busy roads.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. As we move down through, the worst is being out of wiper fluid. Okay. All right.
Ooh, that is bad.
That's dangerous.
All right.
But, yeah. I mean, I guess you could run out of it on surprise, but...
It's just bad when you're, like, heading west and the sun is setting and you got the dirty windshield and you can't see.
Yeah.
Very bad.
That's when you stick your head out the window. Pretend you're
Ace Ventura style.
847 says the worst is having a 5-year-old son who thinks it's funny to poop in public bathrooms. Okay.
to use a public bathroom and to poop. Well, and to poop in it.
At least he's using the bathroom.
I guess. Well, right. You know, I poop at work all the time, and I think that's kind of funny.
Yeah. So there you go.
So I'm like, if you're
not kid after your own heart.
If you're not getting paid to poop, what are you doing?
None of my bosses are listening, but sometimes I just pretend to poop just to sit down for 15 minutes.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
It's pretend poop.
Poop at work. Need a little break.
Work pretend poop's the worst.
Need to get off my feet here for a minute.
262 says the worst is when you get the same present for your wife as last year.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good place to end. And you forget.
She'll notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. That's the worst tonight. Let's get some of these prizes out, and we will give some stuff away. We've got a pair of passes to see the Lego Batman movie at Arclight Cinemas in Chicago, or Glenview, the self-described leading man of a Lego movie ensemble stars in his own big screen adventure with Will Arnett as Lego Batman, saving Gotham from the Joker's hostile takeover. See it in cinemas now and get tickets at legobatman.com. And second and third place tonight are going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home to Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online. LouMalnati's.com. All right.
Wonderful.
So I think we've got it here. I just need to find them because we've got so many texts that came through today. While we do that, Mike Makings, tell people about where they can see you next, and I will look this stuff up. And then, Kristen, you tell us what you got coming up.
I'm actually going to be doing a fun little show called the Cupcake Comedy Cabaret.
Oh, yeah.
At the Gallery Cabaret.
Love that place.
I know you do. I've seen you perform there multiple times. Great little bar in Bucktown Thursday night. I will be there.
Okay. Yeah, and the host might dress up like an anime character, just to warn you.
He usually does, but he will make you an origami dollar.
Yeah, he's good at that, man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and Kristen, what do you got coming up?
This Saturday at 8 o'clock, I'm doing the Laugh Factory.
All right,
that's
this Saturday.
Laugh Factory on Broadway. Yep.
All right.
That's always a good time.
All right, here we go. Let's get to it. We're going to give third place a Lou Malnati's gift certificate tonight. Is going to go to 949, who said the worst is when you're excited to play the worst but end up too heartbroken because your boyfriend broke up with you and dropped you off by the tenth city developing a lower whacker, but at least he didn't do it on Valentine's Day. We questioned the validity of this one.
We gave her a bit of a hard time.
And she responded back, and she seemed to be legit, so we're going to give her third place a pizza to drown her sorrows in cheese.
Maybe fill up that broken heart a little bit.
Yeah, right? Yeah. All right, so that is going to be third place. Second place, as I look for the text here, is the one we just read. So many are coming in here. It's kind of crazy. 773 says, second place is going to get you a pizza, juggling your groceries in your arms as you leave the stores because you're too cheap to pay 7 cents for a bag, and you left your reusable one in the car once again.
I've done that I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And first place tonight is going to get a pair of passes to see the Lego Batman movie at Arclight Cinemas in Chicago, and we're going to give that one to Donna! Talked about her harrowing experience on a log ride at a Disneyland or Disney World. I didn't catch which one it was, but it sounded awful. But at least she got a fast ride out of it.
Yeah.
And her 13-year-old daughter almost fell out of the log. So she's going to get first place.
Story to tell.
They did.
The largest splash mountain has ever seen.
There you go. Mike Makings, Kristen Lundberg, thanks so much for playing the worst this week. Go check them out at their respective shows coming up. We appreciate it, guys. All right, that's going to do it tonight for The Download. Patty Vasquez up next. I believe she's live in Springfield. The big budget address tomorrow with Governor Rauner. Of course, Patty is down there. She's been covering state politics for WGN and for her show for the last couple of years, and she does a great job with it. So we must listen to radio tonight and tomorrow with Patty as she talks about the budget address, which I don't even know if it's going to be a budget address.
Should be a short speech.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because there's not much of a budget in place right now.
We're just going to talk about how we need a budget. A budget address, how we need a budget. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night. The Cats play Maryland at 6 o'clock, and so we're on at 8:30, and then Karen Lewis is going to join us, Chicago Teachers Union president. We'll have a good show tomorrow night here on The Download.